get it going. It's time to get up.
Miller, left wing, into the Minnesota zone with a wrist shot. He scores! JT Miller from the top of the left circle, and the Canucks lead 2-1.
These guys are here to break it all down.
This is a tough series right now. It's hard, it's physical, and we evened it up tonight, and it's getting funner as we go. Funner is probably not the right word, but I'll use it. More fun. How's that?
Let's have a little fun and make you a winner.
Now back the other way. Aho! He scores! Sebastian Aho! What sorcery is that?
This is the Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
All right, y'all feeling better this morning? Hey, another hot day here at Metro Vancouver, and the Canucks are on the board. First win in what, 5 years in the Stanley Cup playoffs? Let's do this. James Cebulski, Perry Solkowski on this Wednesday morning where, hey, the masses are calm somewhat after evening up the series last night. Pair, much improved effort, I think, last night.
Exhausting day of hockey. An exhausting day of watching games that mean a lot. So with this, I will take back, James, what I have been saying for 3 months prior to the puck dropping. Winning the Stanley Cup in 2020, you have to have a big asterisk because it's not going to be the same because everyone's going to be healthy and it's just going to be a sprint, not a marathon. Man, seeing as many players drop as we did yesterday, seeing injuries pop up as quickly as we have, and knowing not what we're watching with the Canucks game, how physical it is going, this is just to actually get in to the playoffs and get onto that run. If you're raising a Stanley Cup in September, congrats to you, because it's going to be a battle, and the Canucks were ready for it last night. Full credit for them to win. There were still some leaks in their game, but they're the better hockey team when both these teams play well. Needed that for a confidence boost, and they get it. I'll take away some parts of that game. The last 10 minutes, man, let's take it across the finish line. But they were there. They now understand what it takes and look forward to what they put together tomorrow.
Yeah, no, it happened early, 24 seconds in. There's Tanner Pearson, who was clearly on social media after Sunday's loss to the Wild. Because everybody was blaming Tanner Pearson for that loss. I mean, there were a lot of no-shows in Game 1. Tanner Pearson took a lot of shrapnel for the better part of the last 48 hours going into puck drop last night for Game number 2. He steps up with a goal 24 seconds in and really kind of sets the tone for the Vancouver Canucks. You look at the way this team responded, like, no passengers last night. No passengers. And that is what, if you're a fan, that's what you want to see from this team. You want to see this team compete. You want to see them fight. And you look at, you know, the changes. Vertanen comes into the lineup. He gets in. So does Louis Erickson, much to the chagrin of so many people last night when they see that announcement. Gaudette and Toffoli both deemed unfit to play going into last night. So Toffoli, obviously, that's got to be a concern for the Canucks. But Gaudette, not a scratch. He's obviously dealing with something, being deemed unfit to play by head coach Travis Green last night. But man, look at the effort from those two guys. I mean, you can look at all your top six guys and those key guys last night, Pair. But man, the way that Vertanen, in limited minutes, he played 8.5 minutes, but man, he was noticeable out there. You're ready to shotgun a beer the way he backchecked, breaking up a play on Joel Eriksson Ek last night in the middle of the game. And then Louis Erickson with 20 minutes of ice time. Who saw that coming? And effective minutes, too.
Well, and it's amazing how quick the depth can go because, the one guy he didn't mention, too, is Michael Ferland played 2 minutes of hockey. And who knows what the situation is. Here's why I just get, man, unfit to play. You need the mystery going, the Scooby-Doo gang. Someone tell us what's going on. Is it cognitive issues again with Ferland? Are there walking boots that seem to be rumored around for some of these players? But to your point, there was NHL players that were in the press box for Game 1, in Jake, in Ferland. They still have one in Zach McEwen. But you think of how that game started. Louis Erickson starts with Bo Horvat, and he was part of that good run the Canucks were on. So, yeah, you get that break. Pearson scores, and then you go penalty, and Louis Erickson's part of the penalty kill. I think at the 14-minute mark, they played 6 minutes of hockey. Erickson had played already about 3 minutes because of the penalty kill. Pettersson hadn't even been on the ice. And what that guy did in Sweden, I don't know. But you could put him in the tough guy role now. The kid's been unbelievable going, so this is North American hockey? Screw you. I've got a side that you've never seen, and I'm going to show it right now because I'm going to be the best in the world at this game, and he will get there eventually. He was great. But you were right, effective roles, and I think every team that won yesterday, James, if you go back to the post-game comments, and not that it's strange, it's usually the same come this time, was about, man, everybody, team win. Guys who are supposed to score, scored. Disciplined more. Not as nervous, finished our checks, did all that. And that's a check for the Vancouver Canucks. Not for an entire 60 minutes, but for enough. They played enough. All of them pushed hard enough to go, yeah, we're even in this series. And we'll hear from some of the guys. Now it's the confidence. Okay, that's game two. Not as nervous. Now we've got some confidence. We've got to win. So we'll see where it goes from there. But boy, when you can go to the press box and bring two guys, as you said, who are that effective, that's a big win for the team.
Well, I mean, just no passengers last night. That's the one thing you really got to appreciate. I didn't love the way they finished. I still think the best player in the series is Kevin Fiala, and two late goals in that one. Boy, oh boy. You look at the numbers from Kevin Fiala, the way he was playing before the world kind of was put on pause. In the final 14 games before the global pandemic of COVID-19 basically stopped everything, Kevin Fiala had 14 goals and 26 points in the final 18 games before the world went on pause. Think about 14 goals in 18 games. I mean, he was on absolute fire, and he's picked up with 3 goals now in the first 2 games of this series. What a release that he has. Pettersson trying to match up with him last night, and just in terms of his performance, Petey was dynamic last night. I know the points don't necessarily reflect that in some ways, but man, oh man, Pettersson's looked great, engaged physically as well. Per, we are jam-packed over the next 3 hours getting into this, and we're going to be talking about this all morning long. And shout out to everybody that kept up satin walks up till well after 1 o'clock in the morning. The text line was blowing up, the phone lines were blowing up on the Sportsnet 650 post-game show last night. Wanted those guys to have an all-nighter, and we're going to keep the good times going. Lots of people already jumping in at 650. If you got a comment, you want to weigh in with what went down, I see a lot of you already jumping into the action, and this is what happens when winning gets contagious. It's a best of three now. But what do we got coming up over the next 3 hours? No shortage of rock stars dropping by this morning as well.
No, why not? I mean, we can talk about the battles, but we've got guys who have been on the battles. You know what I like about some of these guys? It's, you know, they work so hard to play, and they chase that Stanley Cup dream, and then they go, yeah, we're in the media now. We're going to work. How about Juice getting into it? Kevin Bieksa late last night, analyzing the hockey game. True Canuck alumni Kevin Bieksa will join us at 7 o'clock. We'll get into it with Juice, what he liked and didn't like. I mean, he is straight. He's good. Man, he's good on that panel. He's talking about, you know, blocking shots and the knuckles and all those things. Eric Francis will break down a Calgary Flames team, James. Both you and I, when this series started, said no. I think the Calgary Flames, Eric included, said no one in Calgary expects this team to win. They did exactly that. And then Jovo will wake up. Jovo Kopp, who said before this all started, man, guys, whoever loses the first game, bet the team coming back to even up the series. He goes, it's the spirit of an athlete. That's what it's all about. Ed Jovanovski will talk to us as well. And of course, we're going to give you all the post-game sound. It almost feels like, James, we're just a continuation of the post game because it was a late game. I'm thankful we don't live out east and this would be the norm, but man, it's kind of fun. And before you know it, this day is going to be gone. You're going to go, what? They're playing at 11:30 tomorrow morning? Change my day. Let's get it gone. So that's all ahead. What's going to be a fun show is break everything down, what happened last night and what's going to be ahead, and another day with meaningful games to start at 9 o'clock this morning.
Yeah. Our poll question this morning as well. How about this, Pair? What's your most surprising takeaway from last night's game two performance? Was it Pettersson's physical play? Was it Jake Virtanen's back check? Was it Erickson playing more than 20 minutes on the ice last night? Or was it Brock Besser's play, who Besser, Man, I haven't seen Brock Besser play a game like that. You'd probably have to go back at least to January, where he picked up a couple of goals in the win against the Buffalo Sabres. Maybe the hat trick against the Kings early in the year. But, man, he looked like the player. The way he was engaged physically as well, he looked like the player to me really for the first time since he suffered that broken back. I mean, maybe you could go back to the night against the Avalanche a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago. But, man, I don't know if I've seen Brock Besser play a game like that in almost 2 years. Like, I just hadn't seen that in a long time. Right now, 38% of you say Pedersen's physical play. But get in on that. At Sportsnet 650 is where you can find us on Twitter. 650-650 is our text line. You know, to see so many different surprises, like we mentioned, the Pedersen, I think Pedersen probably got away with one late, you know, punching Hartman in the back of the head. Hartman was woozy, you know, getting off the ice, needed help. And there's a guy who had been a thorn in the Canucks side. But we got a legitimate series here now, Pear. I mean, the physicality on both sides. Travis Green talked about it being physical after game one, but you look at how things played out, both teams kind of on the ice at the end, kind of the talk, the back and forth going at it between these two teams. But look at the injuries last night. Michael Ferland goes down 2.5 minutes in. I know Chris Cuthbert had said on the broadcast that it may have been he may have taken a shot or something along those lines, as opposed, I think the first thought is, oh my, is this a concussion related situation here for Michael Ferland? So, you know, we wait and see what that looks like. Roussel takes a puck in the face. How many guys took pucks in the face in Edmonton
yesterday? Oh, it was awful yesterday.
Right?
Yeah,
Forbert, you know. Forbert in Calgary yesterday takes one. But to lose players like that, Hartman goes down. I mean, there were guys on both sides that were banged up after this one, and you needed everybody to show up in a big way, and you saw that. I mean, Erickson to get over 20 minutes. Who would have ever saw that coming? But I understand the logic why Louis gets in there last night, Pear, over a guy like Zach MacEwen. Do you want to put in two more guys who've never played a playoff game before? I think experience counts. And every former player that I talked to yesterday, they were all kind of saying, man, I like veterans at times like this. You need veterans at times like this. Look at how the Wild responded in game one. Look at the way the Canucks bounced back in game number two. I think it was a good call, and obviously the right call with the Canucks coming away with the win in game number two.
Well, yeah, you want experience. Tanner Pearson talked about his first game in the NHL was jumping into the Shark Tank, literally in the playoffs, and you just figure it out. You mentioned it, and let's hear from Brock Besser right now, because he's noticeable, and it's not always the shot, the hair, the flow. Brock Besser is getting dirty. He's learning how to get dirty and understands the pressure. Right place, right time for a goal scorer, but he was not afraid to get to those dirty areas. And number six with these thoughts post-game on his goal and on the team's play.
Well, it's exciting to score your first playoff goal. And, you know, I think it's a big goal for our team. I thought our team played a pretty strong game tonight. And, you know, obviously it was nice to play with Petey and Millsy. Obviously we have some chemistry from the past. So I feel that we picked up where we left off and, you know, as top six forwards, and we needed to contribute tonight, and I thought we did that.
You know, it's funny, James, what you can learn in 24 hours and 60 minutes of playoff hockey. I think, you know, when we get away from this and it's regular season hockey, Brock Besser's not necessarily always going to go to the dirty areas, and neither is Pedersen. They'll get their points, they'll snipe, and then they'll understand that, hey, we now have a switch. They have found that switch of this is how we win postseason hockey. Okay, we've been told, we looked at the tape, here I go, I'm going to those areas. And to me, it was Pedersen going, everybody follow me, man. You don't think I'm going to the front of the net? Look where I am when JT Miller scores, right at the front of the net. Brock, how'd you get the goal? That's me in the front of the net deflecting it to you. And Brock Besser's there with his buddy going, yeah, I'll do that too. We'll make it work. And we know JT Miller, we're the 649 line reunited. And to your point, Brock Besser now with confidence playing. And you're right. This guy has not been 100% for a long time. He was the one player singled out, and he was the player yesterday that gets that goal, which a little bit of relief, a little bit of breathing room where they didn't have to chase that game yesterday. And it's a different game when Minnesota's coming from behind.
You know, JT Miller, a guy who, man, just an absolute warrior last night. There he is blocking shots. Probably scored the filthiest goal of the night as well, with that second goal for the Canucks in this one. You know, just really summed it up as it was a total team effort with this one. Take a listen.
We talked about, you know, 15, 20 more percent in this game. And I think that up and down the lineup, everybody contributed today. We needed, I mean, Big Sutz, Motter, and Bo and Tanner and Louis, like they're on the ice the last 5-6 minutes of the game, you know, taking those gritty face-offs, you know, taking slashes. And, you know, you can't say enough about, you know, the lineup top to bottom today.
There's JT Miller, and just what can you say? I mean, there were a lot of guys that were called out. You know, pedestrian game, I thought, for Bo Horvat in game one. I didn't like Besser as much as some people thought in game number one as well. Obviously, Pearson was MIA and had a tough night, taking a couple of penalties in the opener. You know, Toffoli, obviously, it seems like he might have been hurt, which might have explained his off night in game number one as well, Pear. But, you know, to just muster 5 shots on goal collectively from your top six in the opener. I it was great to see the Lotto line play as effectively as they did last night. I'm still one to believe that I like the chemistry that Tyler Toffoli brings alongside Pettersson and Miller. I mean, the fact that the guy was a point-a-game player in the 10 games in the small sample size that we saw from Toffoli, hopefully he's healthy and can get back into the lineup sooner rather than later. But it's a good thing that the Canucks have depth. You know, for all the things that, or all the warts you want to point out with Louis Erickson's game. And the Louis haters still had something to cheer about last night, paired with that folded stick on that wide, glorious opportunity that Erickson had to really kind of ice it late in the game. And then his stick absolutely crumbles, which is the most Louis Erickson thing to happen. But, you know, you look at to have those reserves, to have Vertanen in the press box, to have Erickson, and to have Zach MacEwen all waiting in the wings. You know what? They might have to go to all these reserves here. You might see Zach MacEwen, depending on the health of Roussel or Ferland, for that matter. And you know, with Toffoli and Gaudette as well. But here we are 2 games into the playoffs, and you're talking about the health of 4 players up front already for the Canucks.
Yeah, and that's what I said, that I was remiss saying that this is going to be an easier Stanley Cup to win because you've lost so many guys that quick, and the depth is going to be tested. It was, and it was fine, but you're 2 games in and you lost those players. And, you know, it must be driving the Ian McIntyres and the Dan Murphys and everyone crazy who are right there in the bubble going, oh, what's wrong with them? Well, you know what? Unless someone's going to text you, you're not going to find out because you're not going to be able to see these guys walking around. You're not in the bubble. You're on a different level for them. But the depth was there and will be there. Coach Green, without calling out the top six, did after game number one. And so not that he was going to be effusive with his praise yesterday. It's one game. He knows it means a lot. But Travis Green, referring to the top six, he had confidence in him. I think this entire fan base, James, had confidence that this team was going to rebound. And certainly his top two lines did exactly that yesterday.
I think they all knew that, you know, for us to move or to win, to move on from the series, they're going to have to be a factor in it. I think it's hard to win in any playoff series when if your top guys aren't producing. And I was happy for them tonight. There's been a lot of talk of it over the last couple of days. And they all played well.
Yeah, and they did because you need everybody. And that's what they had. I didn't think they're scoring a goal in the first shift of the game. A goal that, you know what, Chris Cusworth mentioned, and he said that Stalick had said, hey, did that not go well? You never did see a replay of that. Great shot by Tanner Pearson. Got him rolling. Boy, they could have put this game away earlier if their power play was working. I would imagine that's a lot of the film session today. Weren't ready for the quick attack and the pressure put on them when they had the man advantage. But full credit for a team that will sleep well today, and they will be banged up and bruised. There's no way Pettersson is walking around thinking, oh, I feel great. But that's what it's going to take, and it's going to be a long road to get there, but at least they're back on even terms. 11:30 tomorrow morning, they go back at the first of back-to-back. Game 4 will also be on Friday.
We will continue the post-game coverage into the morning and throughout the morning, all morning long here until 9 o'clock here. Your Ski Patrol, Cebulski, Sulkowski. More Canucks conversation coming. 6:50. I see a lot of you jumping in already. We'll get to those, some of those conversations, a couple things that you want to weigh in. What stood out for you last night? What impressed you the most? Want to hear from you. We'll get to those momentarily. But right now, it's time for a little what else is happening in the world with Now You Know.
We're dropping knowledge this early in the morning.
I am smart. S-M-R-T.
This is Now You Know on the starting lineup. Here's James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
Oh, you know, just one of the best names to chant here in Canucks franchise history. Gino, Gino. And you know, so many Canucks fans were chanting Gino again yesterday. He was on a podcast, the Cam and Strick podcast, and took aim at, you know, NHL Hall of Famer, a guy perceived in most markets as the greatest leader in sports, Mark Messier, and Gino basically saying that Messier was a disaster for Vancouver here. In this conversation on the podcast, the legendary Canucks enforcer suggesting the six-time Cup winner was washed up when he landed here on the West Coast.
You know, he was a good player when he was in New York and when he was Edmonton, but he couldn't play the way, like what would happen is the coach would call a line out and he would just get up and jump on the ice without his number being called. And he wanted to be on the ice all the time. But at that time he was at the end of his career and he couldn't compete against the young centerman anymore. But he didn't want to accept that. He still wanted to play the number one line and play 25 minutes a night. You know, it was a disaster for us when he came to Vancouver. But, you know, I respect him as a player when he was in New York and Edmonton during his years where he was a prime. But when he came to Vancouver, he wasn't the same guy anymore.
So there's Gino. And it, to me, I think a lot of people, a lot of fans here in this market would say, absolutely, Gino, you're 100% right. What I find so dynamic with this pair, or conflicting in my mind, any young player that I've ever talked to or any player who was a young player that dealt with the rub with Messier here in Vancouver, they always raved about the leadership that Messier showed for them and helping them develop as a player and just the wisdom that he shared. The veteran guys don't have a lot of love, and I wonder if it's simply because Messier came in and essentially broke up the band. Right, the 94 Canucks team is probably the most lovable squad in franchise history. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that they played, even coming up short, man, people loved that team because of the personalities and the way they played and kind of the Cinderella story that it was. I think the fact that Messier is perceived as the guy who broke up that band, the veterans, I get, you know, Lyndon getting traded, Gino, all of them, but the young guys loved Messier.
Yeah, what would you think if Adam Gaudette and a draft pick and someone were traded for Brad Marchand and, you know, Bruce Cassidy came here and all of a sudden they were doing it? You know, you go back and think, you were so close with that 94 team, and then you take the two key pieces of it and say, come out to the West Coast and take control. I had heard a story, and I traveled with that team when Mess was there, that, you know, it was kind of told, hey, don't expect Mess to be giving it their all for the 80-plus games. He'll take some time off. He'll take some games off. He's not going to be going to the dirty areas. I just wonder if it's an intimidation that, you know, good on Gino to say that. I could completely see Keenan calling out a line to go up next and Messier deciding I'm going. And no one saying it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. It was just a bad setup. I think most people would agree with Gino Ojek. But to your point, all those players who have been in that dressing room said, he was a wonderful influence on us and teaching us how to win. Now you know.
I did not know that.
You know, there was a time Messier would jump on the ice and do all that. Well, maybe that was the game plan yesterday for the Leafs. They took their best player and said, play. Play a lot. 24 minutes, 31 shifts, more than anybody yesterday in Toronto for Austin Matthews. This guy has taken his criticism. You know, in the last 48 hours, you've heard some stuff on Connor McDavid, and he responded. Austin Matthews has heard it, and he responded yesterday. The best player on the ice, the best player in the series. He got the job done. And you know what? John Tortorella wasn't going to single out Austin Matthews, wasn't going to single out anybody. As far as post-game and what happened in the Leafs game, Torts went pretty much Marshawn Lynch. One answer for every question.
I'm not going to break the game down at all. Toronto played a really good game. We sucked. But I'm not interested. It doesn't help our club right now to break it down with you guys. So I hope you can understand that.
Yeah, and he said that again and again, and finally they said that's enough. And if Austin Matthews plays at that level, James, I think the Toronto Maple Leafs are a hockey team where talent will beat hard work, because that's what usually happens when your talent works hard, and they did yesterday.
Corposalo's been great in the series. I like the way that Matthews has played through the first two games. I thought he was very noticeable in game one, and I thought he was noticeable again in game two, finally getting the team going with the way he performed, getting that first goal. And Torts being Torts, you know, I think I counted four times Toronto played well, we sucked. Now you know.
Well, now you know.
25 minutes after 6 o'clock here on this Wednesday morning. James and Perry kicking it with you until 9 o'clock. We will continue the Canucks post-game coverage. They're back in the series. It's a best of three. And what are you doing for tomorrow's game? 11:30 puck drop. Are you firing it up in the patio in your backyard? Are you going somewhere? What are you doing? It's still a pandemic, people, but man, lunchtime hockey with the Canucks? This I'm curious about. Let us know your ideas. 650, 650, and we'll continue to break down what we saw last night on the ice. Next, right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Wild setting up in the Vancouver zone again. Alex Galchenyuk turned it over to JT Miller, and the Canucks have numbers in the rush. Miller, left wing, into the Minnesota zone with a wrist shot. He scores! JT Miller from the top of the left circle, and the Canucks lead 2-1.
This is the starting lineup with Jim Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
6:32, when was the last time you heard this song, boys and girls? Hey! Man, you got to go back to the beginning of March to the last time you had that song playing for the Vancouver Canucks, and
I sang it last week on holidays.
So
we were on the lake. We were on the lake, and Elton John's got a place on Okanagan Lake, and we were apparently in an area where he lives. We didn't know which house, but I was told. So I busted a little. I'm still standing. My head right.
Yeah, but the Canucks didn't inspire you to play that. You were just because you were hanging out.
You
near
just
Elton.
Asked me when's the last time you heard this song. I mean, I played it myself.
Well, of course. Of course that would be the most Solkowski thing, to just play some Elton John randomly while you're on holidays.
It's amazing what hockey does to this country, and when your home team wins, just the spirit, our text line is hoppy. Just everyone's in a good mood. And I was driving yesterday down. We had a spin class, so we went did something we haven't done since March. Shout out to the city of Port Moody. They put it in a curling week. We, you know, with the protocol and everything was great. But as I'm driving by, and I've been saying for the last couple of days, I haven't seen any kind of car flags. It was almost like it was a plant. This guy beside me, both flags hanging out, flying on. All right, we're getting into it. And I think, James, after that performance, more people this morning, whether you're at home, your Zoom meetings, or you're going into the office. Oh, it's good. Yeah, what are we going to do tomorrow? They play at 11:30. It just lifts the spirit of the city. And I'm not worried the fact that it's August. It's going to be a scorcher out. You're finding time now to make sure you can watch this hockey team play now. And see
I
where
see
can
you,
go.
Perry. I got two car flags for you. And you ain't down for
face.
That. I got two
so
words
waiting
for you.
For me to leave.
Car flag.
You car flag, Solkowski. Here you go.
You look at on our text line right now here at 650-650, Eric texting in, and we were talking about the depth that steps up last night, particularly Bertanen, who gets back into the lineup. Louis Erickson plays 20-plus minutes of ice time last night, killing penalties as well. But Eric makes the point. He says that depth is attributable to Jim Benning. He built this team's depth. Just saying that because he catches so much flack all the time. And, you know, I think that's a good point. With, you know, you look at the run that Benning has had. Yes, there's been a ton of speed bumps and potholes along the way. And, you know, with the Vertanen narrative that's come up over the last little while, obviously the Ole Ullevi conversation, it's been over 4 years. And, you know, I think Ullevi had a strong camp here and has kind of played himself into the conversation anyway. But, you know, Jim Benning, you know, you look at the pieces that he brought here that were on display. he took a swing for the fences last year with that trade for JT Miller. Pair, I didn't love it. It felt like way too steep a price for a guy who just seemed like more of a, you know, a mid-range forward. JT Miller has made this team significantly better with his performance this year, and it was on display again last night. You know, those types of moves, Benning drafting Elias Pettersson fifth overall, you know, that raised a lot of eyebrows. That wasn't a popular pick in 2017. Look at him now. He is the franchise player for this hockey club. Jim Benning, the captain of the ship at this point in time. And I think, hey, look, it's one game, but I think it's a good point by Eric.
Yeah, you know, I don't think after game one we should have said Jim Benning, and I'm sure if we would have looked through all the text, someone said Benning didn't get it right. They need top six. They're not legitimate top six. Tanner Pearson's not a top six, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I don't think we should take them evening up the series as, hey, Jim Benning is great. He built this team in a different way where he looked after the bottom six and figured a Jay Beagle come playoff time would be helpful. Tyler Mott, getting him for Vanek was a great deal. There's no way around it. Tyler Mott.
How good was he last night?
Yeah, you know what? Just skates hard and plays hard. And when you're killing as many penalties as he did, he's a great find. And then you hope that the young stars you have drafted will be able to find their way. And that's what we saw yesterday. The young stars found their way. And let's not just talk about the skaters up front. Let's go to Jim Benning going, you know what? I think Eddie Lack can be moved, and I think Jacob Markstrom will eventually be our guy. And again, it wasn't a beautiful 60 minutes. Kelly Rudy said as much. He thought that after 20 minutes, Jacob Markstrom was fighting it, but he's finding it. He's got that ability. And here's what Markstrom had to say about evening things up and how the team played in front of him.
I mean, 5-on-5, you know, I'm seeing the puck. That's what I'm doing. And, you know, the guys are doing a great job. They're battling in front of me. And, you know, they have a lot of big, big, tough players that you know, goes to the net really hard. And you know, our D and centers and forward doing a great job of boxing out and blocking shots and clearing rebounds. So I think that's the main reason for the 5-on-5 success. And, I mean, last shot, too, it wasn't much left on the clock. And, it can't really, you know, it's tough when you get a lot of time to think what you want to do. And I just, you know, let it hit me in the head.
Yeah, that was a little scary, the last one with 7 seconds left. But you know what? He makes another point. And to your point, James, and to talk about depth, hey, you don't talk a lot about him, but thanks for the 12 minutes that Oscar Fantenberg has put in the lineup. On the, you know, they've got the depth on the blue line. Jordy Benn will be back shortly after the birth of his child. You know, that helps out too. But Jacob Markstrom, and as he says, 5-on-5, this team has been good for two games in a row.
That's it. And you know, you made the point that I thought Kelly Rudy said it delicately. He said it nice. I mean, Kelly Rudy's been a Jacob Markstrom guy all season long, as he pointed out, and thought, you know, hey, he should be a Vezina candidate this year and deserve to be. But Jacob Markstrom has not looked right in my mind just yet through the first two games. And I think Kelly made that point where he's not completely comfortable just yet. And Markstrom's made some saves, and that's, you know, last night, you look, case in point, there's a save on Eric Staal not long after the Miller goal, and he comes up with a huge stop, and it was a beautiful save. And I don't think that save will get enough credit from this game, but I thought that was a key stop on Staal midway through the game when the Canucks were starting to kind of find some momentum again and kind of keep Minnesota at bay. But the way things kind of finished, you know, Fiala's got a shot. I think there's no way to take away.
Yeah.
You can't take that away. Like, Kevin Fiala is an absolute monster right now in this series. He is the way that we look up, at Elias Pettersson here in Vancouver. I think Wild fans got to look the same way. Kevin Fiala has really stepped his game up over the last few months and carried that play from before the pandemic, shutting everything down and taking it right here into the playoffs. But you look at Markstrom, kind of, he had a lot of people nervous at the end, because even there's that shot at the buzzer where it's like, oh, and as he said, I just let it hit me in the head. But man, like, that the Canucks needed a closer last night, Pear. They needed a closer the way that they faded at the end of that game.
Yeah, I just think they were trying to get there. I think they're comfortable 4-1, and then all of a sudden you go, oh, this is not done yet. I would use a golf analogy because I'm about to play this afternoon. Is Jacob Markstrom has been making 10-foot putts for par. That's a par. That's all you wanted. But it wasn't done easily. But that's his credit to maturity and able to fight through everything, and he did. I want to listen because we are the home of the Canucks. There's two sides to the story. Here's how Dean Evason, the former Vancouver Giants head coach of the Minnesota Wild. You know, Travis Green, kind of quiet, but we bounced back. So what happened to the Minnesota Wild? Here's what their coach had to say about the game.
We were a step behind tonight. We didn't have the same emotional, charge that we seem to have. And we give them a lot of credit. I mean, they did. They did from the get-go, I thought. We thought when we tied it up that we were fine, but they kept coming, they kept pushing. They did a lot of really good things, and where we were, they were trying to match us the other night. I think we were trying to match them here tonight. So hopefully game three it'll even out or shift to our side again.
See, that's the answer I'm looking for. I don't need Tortorella. Leafs are great. We sucked. Give them some credit. His team didn't come out there to go, yeah, no, I don't think we're as good as them. But I think that yesterday, James, was that game where, as I've said and most have thought, if both teams play to their capabilities, Vancouver's a better hockey team. And maybe they are a half step faster and we're able to get inside and create as many power play opportunities. Dean Evason calling it like he saw it. The Canucks wanted it more. They were more desperate. And now you see who can manufacture that as they're all even up getting set for game three.
Well, and it wasn't pretty to kind of start things. The power play looked really jittery in the opening period. But they did generate a power play goal. They had lots of opportunities, though, right? Like the Canucks, they had 7 power play opportunities. I mean, there was no shortage of, and maybe they were evened up this time. I mean, the Canucks had 7 power play opportunities. The Wild with 6. I think there was a point that Brian Burke had made about all the abuse that Pettersson had taken in game one. And, it seemed as though the officials were mindful of that. And Brian suggesting that maybe there was a conversation with Jim Benning and the official supervisor for that series to say, hey, look, guys, like, here's the evidence. Do something about this, right? Like, let's see a market correction here. Because Pettersson, there were calls that were made, right? And I do wonder, do the Wild look at that now? You look at the Besser hit on Fiala in the first. I think Besser thought he was going to the box, right? The play just kind of stopped for a second, and the official was right there. He's like, play on, guys. But, he bowled Fiala over right into the boards, and Fiala went down. But there's a shot at Fiala. You look at later in the game, Fiala getting frustrated. He takes a penalty before coming back and, burying 2 in the final 2.5 minutes of the game. But do the Wild now take some of that and that body of work and have that conversation? And now they'll have the final change they'll be the home team going into the next game and say, hey, let's look at this evidence here. You guys took care of Pettersson in game number 2. Let's see you do the same for our guy here now in game number 3, because he deserves that sort of respect with the way he's playing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it is. The storyline seemed a little simpler when you can go to game one. One team wasn't ready to go. Then they bounce back. We'll look at tonight. I'm curious. We got Montreal against Pittsburgh tonight. I didn't think there was any way that Pittsburgh would lose game number 2. Now you go, okay, hang on. Are the stars going to shine through or a hard work help? I thought the Canucks had everybody. And that's what they're going to need. And they're going to get some goals in a series that just happens best of 7, best of 5, James. Someone who's not going to score on a regular basis is going to be a hero. But you need your best players to be your best players. And the Canucks got that yesterday. And now we wait and see. And I tell you what, banged up and bruised. Unfortunately, that's the case for the Canucks. We don't know about Ferland. Doesn't sound good about Tyler Toffoli. Don't know how Rossell will be, but I'm sure he'll be okay. But they've had the depth to jump in. But how much more depth can they have? So this is where I said at the beginning of this show, asterisk to win the 2020 Stanley Cup, because it's a sprint and everybody's healthy. Maybe I forgot how tough this sport is, that Yeah, whoever gets to the finish line, they're going to be banged up because this game and the play-in games are just absolutely so intense. It's great to see.
Well, just think of it's all—it's almost like going five rounds now, right? If you're going to try to win, if you're going to try
For
to
sure.
win the Stanley Cup, like say hypothetically, Vancouver or Minnesota just had a eureka moment and they went all the way to the Stanley Cup final. That's effectively five rounds. And look at how these two teams have gone at it through the first two games. I mean, ask Michael Ferland, ask Antoine Roussel, you know, ask Greenway, or ask Hartman. In terms of how, it was, you know, the physicality in this. Ask Tyler Toffoli. Ask Adam Gaudette, right? Like, I mean, there's been some physicality in the first two games. And now think about this. After this best of five, there's four more rounds to go if you hope to win the Stanley Cup this year. It is 14 minutes to 7 o'clock here on this Wednesday morning. Canucks evening up the series. Don't forget, tomorrow, 11:30, puck drop. Just in time for lunch, boys and girls. Kevin BX will join us at the top of the clock. The conversation continues in a moment right here on your home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Quinn Hughes after it. Side up by Brodin, then a pass in front for Stahl, and he's robbed by Markstrom. Great save by Markstrom.
Now more of the starting lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
651, Jacob Markstrom answering back as well. 35 shots the Wild had on goal in this game number two last night. Certainly peppering Markstrom late. It wasn't a pretty finish, but Markstrom stands tall, probably the biggest save of the night on Eric Staal right after the JT Miller goal, and the Canucks skate away with the 4-3 victory. Kevin BX will join us just at 7 o'clock here momentarily. Cebulski, Solkowski on this Wednesday morning, and definitely a different tone. It's amazing how emotional on the roller coaster we are here from one game to the next, aren't we?
Yeah, it's not just us. We're the home of the Canucks. It's the city. It's the city of how they get caught up in everything. And I think this hockey team has, it's grown on you, right? Because you've got all these young kids. You want them to do well. There's some good characters. They understand giving back to this community, you know, what they do with the, you know, Canucks Autism, Canucks for Kids, Canucks Place, and they're a part of it. And you wanted to see them to have success. So it's kind of funny. We've gotten away from it. You know, as we sit and we break down games and we watch the NBA, boy, credit to the NHL. You know, when we're talking injuries, we're not talking COVID tests, and there's the protocol they're going through. I know in the province today, it's just, hey, like if you just step back and go, look what's going on in the world, and they've been able to pull this off. The NHL deserves an awful lot of credit. Today, the New York Rangers will be flying out of the bubble city. So it's not getting bigger. It's getting smaller. And by the weekend, there'll be more teams departing, probably, I guess, do the math, 200 people. So hockey's great. The setup, I think people are getting used to it now without the fans. Yeah, it's disappointing, but it doesn't change the product on the ice. It's been fun to watch, maybe even more so in August. They thought this will be difficult. No, I think people are learning how to change their days to watch their favorite team compete for a Stanley Cup.
It's been, I'll tell you what, like even last night, like from a pregame standpoint on my end, you know, high tide was coming in a little after 8 o'clock last night, about an hour and a half before the game. Went down to the beach, little soak in the ocean, go for a swim for a half an hour, come back. I mean, it's definitely a bit of a reset and adjustment, you know, with, you know,
yeah,
hockey in August. But so far, I like it.
I had to cancel a tee time for tomorrow. Really? They're playing at 11:30? All right, there goes my day's change. Yeah,
you're getting your rounds and you're maximizing your membership here this year, buddy.
What's that?
I said you're maximizing your membership this year.
I said exactly that yesterday because I didn't the year before. When you're as terrible as me, it's become my own. The number of YouTube hits I've had on how to play golf, it's been amazing. It's been amazing. And my wife actually went to the driving range yesterday. Now we were going to have a nice lunch and all that after, but it's like we were 20. I don't have any ideas for a date. Want to go to the driving range? Sure, I'll come. She hit a couple balls. It's been fun. But, yeah, it's neat to have hockey in August. Can't watch every game from 9 till midnight, but, man, I get as many as you can. That's a good job we have at this time of year, James.
Six games to go later on today. It starts at 9 o'clock with the Islanders and the Panthers, and the Islanders could sweep the Panthers a little later on. That could be done by lunchtime. Kevin Bieksel joins us in moments right here on your home of Vancouver hockey. We are Sportsnet 650.
Let's get it going. It's time to get up.
Miller, left wing, into the Minnesota zone with a wrist shot. He scores! JT Miller from the top of the left circle, and the Canucks lead 2-1.
These guys are here to break it all down.
This is a tough series right now. It's hard, it's physical, and you know, we evened it up tonight, and it's getting funner as we go. Funner is probably not the right word, but I'll use it. More fun. How's that?
Let's have a little fun and make you a winner.
Now back the other way. Aho! He scores! Sebastian Aho! What sorcery is that?
This is the Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
7 o'clock. What's going on? The Canucks back into it. All that venom and outrage can finally stand down at least until tomorrow afternoon. We'll see what Game 3 brings us. Cebulski, Solkowski, and also joining the conversation. Pleased to be welcomed by a guy who was there all day, morning, noon, and night. And I'm sure I can't imagine he has anything better to do this morning than to join us, the one, the only former Canuck and Sportsnet broadcast analyst, Kevin Bieksa. KB, how are you, man?
Good, guys. They don't really value sleep in this line of work, do they?
I was going to say, man, your agent for TV's got to be better to get you up this early. What do they feed you there when you're there that long? I mean, you're a guy who's fit and ready. Did they give you good food at least?
Yeah, they give you good food, right? I mean, the problem is, or not the problem, the thing is you have to wake up at a decent time the next day and you have to eat a good breakfast and get a good workout in. Because if you don't do that, then you're sitting around all day and not really active. So that's the key. So after this, it's going to be to the gym and sweat it out a little bit for another day of hockey.
What time did you get out of there last night?
I got out of there at 2.
At 2 o'clock. A.m. Yeah, and you'll be in studio,
I guess.
It's all
right, though. It's a fun gig, but I tell you, I've never watched this much hockey in my life. Even when I played, I never watched a game on TV. I watched my shifts, and that was about the extent of it. So this is a lot of hockey for me. But I'm getting used to it.
Yeah, and you know what? Hey, listen, you've always been good with the media, but it is different when you're breaking it down, and we're going to in a second. But has it been an easy transition for you to, A, watch that much hockey and simply kind of put coaches' eyes on and go, here's what they're doing right, and I'll explain it in this 30-second video clip if you guys can pull it for me for the intermission? Has that been easy for you?
Yeah, you know what? It's been a natural thing. It's something where I'm like, okay, can I do this? And then you're sitting there watching the game, and you just notice – I just noticed it. I talked to Corey Schneider for a bit yesterday, who's doing a good job with NBC, and I said the same thing to him. I go, what do you think about this? He's like, it's pretty easy, eh? And he goes, don't tell anybody. And I go, oh, no, I won't. But, like, you watch the game, and you just notice things, and you just pick things up. Like, I'm not even looking for something. I'm like, oh, you notice that right there? And then some guys, you know, notice it, and some guys don't. So it's been fun. It's been different, and I've been getting used to it, and I enjoy it.
Well, let's dive into what we saw last night with respect to the Canucks and the Wild. Obviously, a bit of a market correction from Vancouver's standpoint. What stood out to you?
Well, what stood out to me is I knew it would take a game. I mean, if you look at the rest of the league, if you look at Pittsburgh and Toronto, the offensive teams, right, the run-and-gun teams or the highly offensive teams, they all struggled out of the gates, and it's a lot easier to come out and be really good defensively than it is to come out and be really good offensively. Defense just takes positioning and effort. To be good offensively, it takes timing, it takes repetition, it takes a feel. And it was understandable that the Canadian teams, or sort of the high-octane power teams, struggled in the first game. Well, they came back in the second game and they played a lot better. I thought the Canucks D were quietly good. I thought... you know, it's funny when Besser gets moved back to his place on the power play, like what a boost it gives him. Like, he's a skill guy. He's there to score goals and make plays. He gets that little backdoor tap in, which is a little bit of a lucky bounce, but then he just gets some extra wind in his sails. And then he's working hard and he's battling. Pettersson's been admirable the way he's battled through the punishment. a la Sedin-esque, and you know, the Sedins endured that punishment for years and years and years and were able to produce, and he's starting to find a way to not only endure it, but produce. I mean, JT Miller was his usual self leading the way. If you want to point me in any direction, go ahead. But it was a good overall game by the Canucks.
Kevin, answer this. We have Bertuzzi on every Tuesday, and Bert yesterday in the morning just said, guys, it's simple. Move your feet. Get to the dirty areas. Move your feet. He was adamant. He was, because I'm not telling you anything other than the guys just have to be aware they're going to get hacked and slashed, but move your feet and you'll get to the scoring areas. Is it that simple? I mean, is that what they did to the Minnesota Wild defense yesterday that caused all the penalties? They just said, I'm not going to stop unless you do something illegal, and they just moved their feet?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with Bert.
Well, you can. We do all the time.
He'll come find me. moving your feet is critical. Moving your feet means you're skating, right? It means you're pushing the pace. And there's a lot of penalties last night. And you know what? Not to be Debbie Downer, that maybe is the one thing that I'm sure the Canucks have to, you know, talk about a little bit, watch some film, is their power play. And Newell Brown, I played with Newey or for Newey, and he's the best power play coach I've ever had, because he had his group so prepared and practices it every day in practice, lots of video. Everybody knows their responsibilities on their entries. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing on the recoveries. They know what they're trying to run when they have the puck in the zone set up. They're going to have to be a lot better, because it's a weapon for them. And if you're going to start getting the calls for the Wild roughing up Pettersson, you got to make them pay. They got the one power play goal, but before that, they were in the first period, they had three power plays and they were very, very sloppy. And, you know, attribute that a little bit to the beginning of a new season and rust and everything. And, you know, I have a couple moving parts with Besser and Toffoli interchanging, but the power play has to be a lot sharper, I think. And if it is, they're going to just take the series over.
Well, and that's, I think you make an excellent point. And that was one of those things that we talked about at the earlier in the week. Like, the defensive game, it almost relates to football. And you hear so often, you know, in a football season that, you know, generally it takes the offense longer to catch up to from a defensive standpoint. And you're right. Like, you start to see life from some of the skill guys. I think outside of McDavid, you know, outside of, you know, Kubalik, there were very few offensive guys that really had much of an impact in those first few days. Now you're starting to find it a little bit more, but for the most part, games have been under for the most part, Kevin. I mean, I think that sort of element from a defensive standpoint, it's just easier to kind of stay in your lane, if you will, or play in your system than it is to go out and be creative, right? If you've only had one exhibition game under your belt, I mean, how do you find that rhythm and timing when you're actually playing in a live game?
Yeah, I said before this started, it takes you about 15, 20 games into the regular season until you really feel comfortable and your timing is on and everything is perfect. So they're obviously not even going to get close to that. So, like I said, it just takes – all defensive play takes is effort, positioning, and half a brain. You know, that's all it takes to be good defensively and a commitment. And all the teams are going to have that right off the bat, because they're going to focus – they probably focused on it in training camp. They reinforced some habits. The offensive part of the game, you can't just tell the offensive players, okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to cycle it twice, and you're going to hit the guy in the slot. Like, it doesn't work that way. You're reading coverages, defensive coverages. You're going to have to beat a guy one-on-one. You got to have a feel. You got to have timing. You got to have chemistry between teammates. And like you said, and like I said it first, definitely, but it takes some time. And
humble. You're humble, too.
These offensive guys will get better. They'll get better and better every game.
Kevin Bieksa joining us, Perry Solkowski, James Cebulski. I think last time we had John Juice, you kind of created a firestorm, said, hey, pump the brakes, guys. I don't know if we're going to see this. We have. It's amazing how the league has got this together. I was saying, hey, put an asterisk beside the 2020 Stanley Cup winner, because it's a war of attrition. This won't be. These guys haven't played for 4 months. They're all going to be fresh. They're dropping like flies. Are you surprised how intense it's going to be? Because whoever hoists this thing, there's going to be bumps and bruises, and they are going to be battered up. Are you surprised how intense it has been this quickly and how physical it's been?
Yeah, I am. And I think I was kind of one of the guys that was the same way, like asterisk. But now I'm thinking,
no way. Like, this is going to be the hardest Stanley Cup ever to win, right?
Yeah, back crazy.
Four-month layoff. You're in a bubble where you can't see your family, and that wears on the guys. It's only been 4 or 5 days. Like, think about this in 2 months of not seeing your wife and your kids. Like, that's going to be just devastating. So this is as hard of a playoff Stanley Cup to win as ever. Not to mention, you're walking around the hotel in the bubble looking at the other team that you're playing, like sharing common rooms with them. It is going to be a war. The thing that I was surprised about how physical it was early in the Rangers Carolina game, the very first game that we had at the playoffs, I could not believe how physical it was. And it made me think, okay, this is going to be, because I thought maybe the crowd plays into it a little bit sometimes in playoffs when, you know, the home team's running around out of the gates and they're hitting everybody and the crowds gets them going and it kind of just amplifies everything. Well, they don't obviously have that. So I thought that it would be a little bit calmer, but it hasn't been. It's been fun to watch. And, you know, moving forward, the games are only going to get more and more intense.
Yeah, and that's a great thing just as a viewer to casually watch, to sit there and dive into this. I mean, the intensity has certainly ramped up pretty quickly, and it only took a couple of days. You look at now some of the adjustments Travis Green makes. He puts Louis Erickson in there last night. Jake Virtanen for all the conversation there. I mean, Jake only plays about 8.5 minutes last night, but they seem to be impactful minutes. Has a solid back check on Joel Eriksson Ek. Just seem to be around the net at times. And for Louis Erickson, for all the shrapnel he's taken, you know, Kevin, for him to step in and play 20 minutes last night, that has to speak volumes in terms of how everybody seemed to collectively show up for the Canucks.
I think putting Louis Erickson in was a bit of a surprise for a lot of people, but I think for Travis, he's a safe bet. Like, you know what you're going to get with Louis Erickson. You have, you know, nothing against Gaudette, but he's a young guy and he's inexperienced. And I didn't really watch his game one and notice anything glaringly wrong with it, but you slot in a guy who's got, because you take out Toffoli, who's got a lot of Stanley Cup and playoff experience, right? He's injured. So you slot in Louis Erickson because you still want to have that guy in the dressing room, that guy who's been there before, who can kind of lead the way. And he goes right up to that line with Bo and he does his job like you want. The thing with Virtanen is he can be very, very effective, very familiar with Jake's game and the kind of person he is, right? It's hard to be very physical every single game in an 82-game regular season. And Virtanen, that's from what I hear, that's always been kind of the knock, is he's not physical enough, often enough. But in this shortened playoffs, with the right mentality, if he's running around and he's hitting guys, and he's a really good skater for how big he is, the thing you can notice about Jake, notice his first two strides. He does this, Josh Manson does this too, who's another big guy. His first two strides is almost like this little hop. And he really explosive, and it really gets him going and moving. Jake's a good skater. He showed it off when he caught that guy in the power play. He's got a really good shot, but he's got that little bit of a nastiness that, especially if Ferland's out of the lineup, they're going to need. And the guy scored 18 goals this year, too. So say what you want about him, he puts the puck in the net. And with Toffoli out, you're going to need that. So he can certainly help this team moving forward with the right mindset.
You mentioned him, and you were not going to know with the not fit to play. Obviously, in this city, there's an awful lot of concern for Michael Ferland, not the hockey player, but you want Michael Ferland, the young man and husband, to be okay. And I don't know, Chris Cuthbert kind of mentioned maybe there was a shot that he blocked, but we all go back to go, man, he's had such a battle with concussion syndrome. How much will he be missed if he's not in the lineup? Because the pushing and shoving after this game, you know, Greenway this size, how much do they need that physical intimidation in the playoffs? Berkey's so big on it. If Ferland's not available for them.
Yeah. Cut out a little bit there, but I think you're asking mostly about Ferland. You can hear me, right?
Yeah. You're good. Yeah. It was about Ferland and his physical presence if he's not around.
Yeah, with Ferland, the thing is, he comes out of the gates in game one, and he has to fight with Foligno, and he wants to prove, I think, to himself and to his teammates that he's good to go, don't worry about me, I'm all in here. And it looks like he's pretty pumped up after the fight. He plays a hard game. He's kind of mixing it up all game long. I think everybody thought he was back to normal. And then when you see him leave the game last night, yeah, there's a lot of question and concern about that because everyone right away is thinking this is his head again. But, you know, not hopefully. You don't ever want to hope someone else is injured with something else, but you kind of hope it is. You hope it's like a shot block or something else that made him leave the game because it would be devastating, devastating to start back square one for him. And I've seen teammates go through it with head injuries and concussions, and Willie Mitchell was out for a long time. And when he finally got back, it was such a relief. And I just wouldn't want anyone to have to go back through that whole process again. And it's a scary injury. It's a life-altering injury. So let's just hope that it's not as bad as we thought.
Kevin, you look around with the rest of the National Hockey League and all the games kind of playing out here. One takeaway that really kind of stands out to me through the first few days of all of this is kind of the changing of the guard and goal. Like, we've seen two, like, just consistence in the National Hockey League for the better part of the last 10 to 15 years. But, you know, the Rangers effectively turned the page on Henrik Lundqvist last night. You look at where with Pekka Rinne in Nashville as well, who has essentially been their guy for the better part of the last 10 plus years. And, you know, you think of the battles that you've had with Pekka Rinne over the years as well, that they've gone with UC Saros. Like, it's kind of an end of an era in some ways, or a new beginning in goal around the National Hockey League, isn't it?
Yeah, games changed, and at some point you're going to expire. And Lundqvist and Rinne have had great careers, but they have these young studs now that are pushing them, and their expiration date's very, very soon. So I'm sure it's tough for them, but they're still in a support role, and they're veteran guys and they're good teammates, and they'll do what they have to do to support their teammates. And if Nashville can go further in the playoffs, I'm sure Rennie's going to play at some point. And Mike Smith's even in that category where he started the first game one, and who knows if he gets back in, but that's just the way it goes, right? The thing with being a goalie is there's only one that can play, so sometimes you're not playing. You got to do other things, open the door, keep the boys light on the bench, and contribute however else you can. Try not to be too weird.
Kevin, refresh my memory. What was your first playoff game? What series did you jump into?
My first playoff game was against Dallas, and it was a 4 overtime Daniel Sedin winner, or Henrik Sedin winner. That was my very first playoff game. I think it played like 55 minutes or something. I was like, what is this? This is ridiculous. I can't move.
That was awesome. I finished the late night sportscast and went back to the rink and saw good parking and watched it end. Question is, how much easier, and maybe that's the crazy answer, but how much more comfortable were you after you got through that for game number 2? Because I think we saw that yesterday with the Canucks, now that they had one under their belt.
First one was always jitters. It's different now being in the bubble and having no fans. And so, like, the atmosphere is a little bit different. I don't know. Maybe it's more intimidating with nobody around and quiet and kind of feeling like the cameras are on you. But I just know that the atmosphere, well, for my first game, was electric. It was at home in Vancouver, used to be called GM Place then. And, you know, you certainly get more and more comfortable as you get more shifts out there. And, you know, get the first one out of your way and under your belt. And more and more, every hockey player plays better when they're comfortable and they're at ease. I know that's Captain Obvious right there, but when you're, like, jittery, it's good to have a little bit of jitters, right? It gives you a little extra boost, a little extra energy. But when you're jittery and nervous to the point where, like, you're fumbling the puck and you just want to get rid of it and it's kind of taking you out of your game, then that's no good. So you want to kind of find that happy balance where you're a little bit nervous and excited and anxious, but you're still comfortable enough that you want to make plays and you want the puck and you don't want it to affect your game.
Who's got the better shot at pulling off the shock and awe upset in round number 1, Chicago or Montreal?
It's hard to bet against goaltending. I think if Carey Price keeps playing the way he does,
oh my God, he's been
they
good,
might shock Pittsburgh.
With all that offensive talent, I kind of like what you said earlier, that the offensive talent's kind of going to rise to the top here as they get more comfortable. Boy, I mean, he's been so good.
Well, you only gave me two options. I picked one, and then you just make fun of it. So, yeah.
Okay. That was Perry. I wouldn't make fun of you, Juice. I wouldn't.
Yeah, no, I made fun of you. Seaball gave it to you. Put it this way. Which series would you change now? If now you get to make your prediction, What series would you call differently than you would have 7 days ago?
Well, you want to lead me into a series or what? Or can I answer this one
freely?
Well,
would you, no, you answer whatever you want, and then I'll make fun of it, and we'll continue on.
I think the Leafs have a better chance than I thought originally. Originally, I thought Columbus was really going to shock a lot of people. And I know Toronto was the favorite, and I don't know why, because they both had 81 points. And it was a very even series. It was the typical offensive team versus the defensive team. I thought the nod went to Columbus and Tortorella, and for all the reasons we talked about, the defensive team being able to start off quicker. I think the way Toronto played last game, and I know a lot of people here in the city were holding their breath before the game and kind of thinking this is our season right now. And they played a really, really good game. The defense was a lot better, which I was concerned about in game one. Freddie's been awesome the whole time, and that's good. He hasn't wavered, and their big boys got going. So if they're, when their big guys get going, confidence we just talked about is huge. When Tavares gets a goal and Marner's buzzing around, making plays, and Matthews looks very, it looks like Pettersson in the sense he's super determined out there. He's not going to be stopped, and it doesn't matter who's checking him. If they get going here and they get really feeling it, they're going to be dangerous.
You've got people texting in here on our text line at 650, 650. I don't know if they're just relatives, but Jono's saying Juice is so good. Jack and Tawasin saying, hey, Kev, huge fan. I still wear your number three every Canucks game. Too bad you can't still play on our blue line. Could definitely use you. So I'm not sure if they're relatives or not, mm-hmm. but you got fans out here still.
He's got nothing to say to the fans. You know when Kevin's good at the job is he's learned how to suck up and make sure that he picks Toronto now rather than say they're not going to be playing for a couple weeks.
Hey man, you recognize where the money go? You follow the money. That's where the advertising dollars go for our company, man. Nobody is cheering more for the Leafs than probably head office. It's just
yes.
The reality.
Well, and we are too. Hey, more Canadian teams, the better. Yes. The win was going to be that Calgary-Winnipeg series. We lost Kevin there, but we do appreciate it. He has been great. And yeah, there's a lot of work. So getting to the gym, getting his workout in, and then going from there. But I agree with him too. I know Bert was big on the Leafs, probably getting upset. That's why I didn't like Torts. No, they were good. We sucked. No, they made you look bad, John. They got that kind of talent, and they worked. And hopefully that's the same case we see with the Canucks, that they made Winnipeg, they made the Minnesota look bad. And Dean Evason gave them the credit, going, they were really good today.
24 minutes after 7 o'clock here, Cebulski and Sulkowski kicking it with you. We will continue the hockey conversation coming up in a matter of moments. In Edmonton, we'll be joined by Sportsnet.ca's Eric Francis as the Calgary Flames have pushed the Jets to the brink of elimination. We'll check in on that All-Canadian series next, right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miller again to the line for Hughes. Back to JT Miller, left wing, fake the shot. Back to Hughes, takes a one-timer, he scores! Quinn Hughes from the top of the point gets a power play goal for Vancouver, and the Canucks take a 4-1 lead.
Now more of the starting lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
7:30, Canucks back into it as they pick up a big Game 2 win. That was a must-win, it seemed, for the Canucks last night against the Wild as they get that 4-3 win. And now, Game 3 tomorrow, 11:30. We'll be going till 9:30 tomorrow morning, Pair, and then get you set for the pregame show with the Scott Rintoul Show. By the way, Scotty will be joined by Corey Schneider. Coming up on the show, and that is on Friday morning. So Corey Schneider, longtime Vancouver Canuck, will be dropping by with Scott on Friday, and we'll be working up until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Yeah, and Corey Schneider, as Kevin Bieksa mentioned in our previous segment, doing some work on NBC, being an analyst and enjoying it just like Juice is doing it. So good on him. Look forward to that conversation with Scott and Corey. Poll question this morning, James, what was the most surprising takeaway from last night's game two? The physical play of Pettersson, Jake on the back check, coming back hard to save an opportunity. Eriksson goes 20 minutes of ice time. Or Besser's play, and most surprising, and I would agree with this. You know, Jake's going to back check. That's a natural instinct. If he's not, that would be the shock. Eriksson is a guy who just fits in. Wasn't even surprised that his stick shattered on a 2-on-1. But I did not think Pettersson would go, okay, I am absolutely all in. And in some cases, instigating the physicality of play. He has proven that one day this kid's winning a Hart Trophy because he has got everything that's needed. He has not shied away from playing playoff hockey. 41% of you agree. 34 say it's Louis Erickson. I've been so impressed with number 40. I just like the jam this kid has, so much of it.
Yeah, just that physical element that Pettersson's had. I gotta lean towards what the 20 minutes that Louis Erickson served up, and of course, you know, the stick folding right on that glorious opportunity for the tap in, and his stick falls apart, which is the most Louis Erickson thing that could happen. But man, like, you know, I think even if you're the biggest Louis hater, you gotta appreciate what he gave the team last night. You know, 20 minutes of solid play and to help out, you know, playing 4.5 minutes on the penalty kill and playing and stepping up in a big way on that. Really impressive to see how that all played out for Louis Erickson to kind of step in after being a healthy scratch. You know, that guy seems to be in the doghouse all the time. And you look at what, and I thought Satshaw made this point last night on the post-game show with Andrew Walker here on Sportsnet 650. And this is something we've talked about as well, Pear. But man, Travis Green was livid. I think organizationally the team was really frustrated with the comments that Louis Erickson had a little over a year ago at the World Hockey Championship about being this disconnect between him and the coach. And what does Louis do? He shows up at camp, nothing but a pro, and finds himself back in the good books. And again, you know, same thing here, showed up with a ready to go in camp. And even though he was on the outside, but was ready to go and stepped up with a big night as well. We'll continue the Canucks conversation momentarily, but want to be joined from Edmonton right now as we shift gears and check in on what's going on between the Flames and the Jets. Eric Francis, who joins us in Flames Insider E-Franchise. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys? Enjoying this little tournament?
This series is feisty, man. Like, this Calgary-Winnipeg series has been, like, must-viewing for me.
Well, you know what? It's funny. Before the series started, I had a ton of people. Like, I was doing radio interviews in the States, and I heard, I knew in Canada it would be intriguing and well-followed because you got two Canadian teams. But even in the States, guys were saying this is going to be the most intriguing or the best series of the qualification round because – on paper, the two teams are so identical and so well-matched. And I think that's proven out in the games, too. Flames pulled away a little bit yesterday, but, you know, up until about the midway point of that game, it was a dead heat as well. All three games have basically been, you know, identical, you know, very, very close.
Well, but you're playing a team that's shorthanded. You know, that's the surprising thing. For the first time, when we talked to you a couple weeks ago, Eric, I said, man, why does no one believe in Calgary? You said even people in Calgary don't believe in the Flames. Man, yeah. If anyone needed a break to mentally get ready and go, okay, here we go. I think that, hey, it happens, but it's been a launching pad for confidence. And it seemed like after yesterday, that Flames team is going, man, we are all in. And they could go on a little bit of a run here.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. It's still the Calgary Flames, and they still always suck in the playoffs. You know, but that's why yesterday's game was so amazing. Like, that's, you know, that's only their third win in their last 12 playoff games, right? You know, dating back, this is the first time since 2015 against Vancouver that they're on a, you know, have a team on the brink of elimination. Like, there's not a lot of good playoff history in Calgary, and so for them though, yesterday on that pivotal game 3, it's 1-1 after one period. And they flipped a switch. Like, there was a 7-minute stanza there where they scored 4 goals and just absolutely dominated and took it to the Canucks. One of the goals was disallowed. One of Lucic's goals was disallowed. But other than that, the pressure, the confidence, and they spoke going into the playoffs about how we've got to capture momentum and keep it going. And they never, you know, in the playoff history for the Flames, they rarely capture momentum and take it anywhere other than, say, 04 when they went on that magical run to the final. So they've got the momentum now, but it means nothing going into the next game. They're feeling it. They feel good, but this Jets team is still too good. They still bounced back brilliantly in game 2. Those Jets did, even though they were missing their two biggest stars. And I won't count them out. I just won't. Not, I won't count them out because Calgary has that history, and I won't count them out because the Jets are that good. I really am impressed by them.
Eric Francis with us here on Sportsnet 650. How did Cam Talbot become the guy? replacing Big Save Dave.
You know, I thought all along that he was going to get the start in the playoffs, and I thought he should, based on 15 NHL playoff games. Big Save Dave, Dave Riddick has never played in the playoffs, ever. And even though the Flames see him as their goalie of the future, you know, they just thought, you know what, Talbot had a better camp, and Talbot was way better down the stretch. David Riddick, for 3 years in a row in the NHL, has had a second half, you know, plummet. You know, he just, his numbers have just dove. And we don't know, they think it has to do with his his physical fitness, but maybe it's his mental side. But either way, Cam Talbot has been great. And the Flames won 6-2 yesterday, but they were outshot. Amazing to me. He made 33 saves, but I can't remember a big one. And I think that's a comment on just how, you know, positionally sound he is and how calm he is. There's no five bell saves with Cam Talbot very often. He'll go through, he'll get the job done. He's got a 924 save percentage, and he's done it just with the most incredible efficiency. He's got a pretty good defense in front of him too, and I think that helps keep the other team to the perimeter. But, yeah, it's amazing. They went into this series, everyone was talking about Connor Hellebuck, and right now it's Cam Talbot who's got the edge. It's pretty interesting.
This city has had a love affair with Milan Lucic. He cashed a big check because of Stanley Cup success and then kind of went missing. Has he been found now in Calgary? As you know, well, what he can do in the postseason?
That's it. Like, you nailed it. Like, they know what he can do. And, like, there's one thing. The Flames are last in this tournament in playoff experience, for what that's worth. You know, 323 games. Lucic has 114 of them. So, that you know, they're leaning on him heavily for all sorts of things, but it's mostly just about in the room. You know, he's a third-line mucker. His hands disappeared about 3 years ago. I think his hands disappeared the day he signed that contract with the Oilers. I don't know if there was some sort of slip-up with the pen as he signed that deal. But
he got through it.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. My hands shaking here.
Yeah, exactly. And something went wrong, but you know what? He's a banger. He's a crasher. He's a leader. And this team needed leadership in playoffs because, like, again, they keep folding. They also needed, you know, a character, someone who could tell them, look, guys, it's okay. You know, anyway, he's been a calming influence. And for him to get two goals yesterday, I know one got called back. And, hey, both of them were fluky as hell. The one that did count, it was, you know, it kind of misfired on it. It was a knuckle puck. But you know what? The boys love him in the room. And you guys know that there's always that guy or two on every team that he scores four goals a year, but when he does, the bench goes nuts. And Lucic had eight this year, and they went nuts every single time. So yesterday was a big moment for him.
And it's, yeah, and you know what? A guy who was a total presence out there. It looked like he broke a mirror for maybe 5 minutes in the middle of the game there between having the goal disallowed and then taking a penalty moments after and then Copp scores to get back into it. Is it fair to say that the Jets just cannot win this series? I mean, do you legitimately believe the Jets can pull this off without Scheifele and Laine? I can't see that.
I know that it sounds tough for any team to, you know, those guys combined, I think, for 78 goals this year.
Yeah.
That are missing. And then there were guys, they lost Tucker Pullman for a little bit yesterday. He came back. Matthew Perreault was pretty banged up. I don't think he's coming back to the series. You know, the list goes on. Mason Appleton, he's a fourth liner. But still, you know, you got these guys and you're counting on your depth. But this kid, Jansen Harkins, stepped in and scored his first goal in his first NHL playoff game the other day. So I still think they can do this. I still think the Jets can come back and win it. I don't think they will, but I'm just saying I still think they can. They're a talented, talented team. And, you know, I think when you look back at the Jets 2 or 3 years from now, you're going to look back and say, wow, that is amazing that, you know, they never did more in the playoffs because I think they're such a deep roster. I give them so much credit. I want to go back to Lucic, guys. Because not only did he contribute all those other things yesterday, he also had the best line of the game yesterday. We can hear everything when we're sitting in the stands there. And he got whistled for a penalty. And as he was going to the penalty box, you know, he's screaming and yelling and dropping all sorts of F-bombs. But he says to the ref, "You just want to be on TV. That's all. You just want to be on TV."
Yeah. It's always the big
That's
tough
That's Perry's
guys
story
that have the
all the time,
lines,
too.
Isn't it? Hey, let me ask you this, and it would be it's all conjecture, Eric, unless you know, but you know Michael Ferland well from your Calgary days and his Calgary days. We don't know. He played 2 minutes of hockey yesterday. Cuthbert speculating maybe there was a shot block or something. There's got to be some serious concern, though, and we don't know with the unfit to play. What would your sense be?
Oh, God, it scares me, right? I'm a huge Michael Ferlin fan, and I think a lot of people are. And, you know, I don't know if the concussion thing is back, and I hope not. And, you know, that would be my guess. And I didn't see the incident or what I didn't see his 2 minutes of play last night isolated. You know, I just kind of watched the game on the whole. But I hope that's not the case. You guys saw when he was with Calgary what he did to disrupt a series against Vancouver. And I know that was 5 years ago, but that's the capability he has, you know, and he's just so physical and that's so needed in the playoffs. Man, I hope it's not what I think it is, but I fear the worst for him. I hope we see him back next game. And I know we're not going to get any indication until the puck is dropped, probably.
Nice to catch up with you. Appreciate you doing this quick and early this morning. I know there's been some long days and going back to back. You got a day to breathe at least here, but it's been a fun series. Looking forward to much more of it. Thanks for doing this morning, Eric.
Oh, boys, I love talking to you. I'll talk anytime as long as I'm not golfing.
Later,
thanks,
Francis.
Eric. Later.
You'll be good.
Cheers.
There he is, Eric Francis, covering the Jets and Flames series. And that's been a fun one. You know what? And the Flames, there's a different look to the Flames. And, you know, look at Johnny Gaudreau. Look at the way he's playing in this series, Pear. He's got jump, like, for a guy who took a lot of crap, and rightly so, because he was MIA in that series against the Avs last year. Johnny Hockey has been a different player this postseason, and he deserved a better fate. And Hellebuck made a great stop on him, but he made a phenomenal move to the net. You know, Sebastian Aho had a special one yesterday against the Rangers, but we'd be talking about what Johnny Gaudreau did if he finishes that, but it stopped right at the line. But this team, they look like they have a different gear this year.
Well, you know, they always say what professional sports, it's 90% mental, 10% physical, because everyone at that level is so talented. If I was to, in my personal rankings, go with the teams in the bubble in Edmonton, I would say mentally the strongest team there are of course, your team that has won Stanley Cup championships. And that's why I'm not so sure Edmonton beat Chicago, because Chicago is mentally tough with their core group. They have been through absolutely everything. Now, if I was to rank my weakest mental team, I'd go probably the Calgary Flames, man, as Eric told us. It's been a long time since they've been able to win, and now they seem to have that confidence and mentally are playing better. The confidence of a Johnny Gaudreau, of a Lucic going, we can do this again. And I would say, I'm not sure where the Vancouver Canucks are mentally really strong because they rebounded. And if they have that confidence, and I think they're going to play hockey for a little while too. But that's the difference. Confidence can be so different. And I think the Calgary Flames have that, and you know how good they were last year. I think they get rid of the Winnipeg Jets, and whoever they see in front of them, I think they'll be confident enough to go, hey, we got good goaltending. We're a good hockey team, and they are. They might go on a little bit of a run here and surprise a lot of people.
7:45, Canucks tied at 1. They've turned it into a best of 3. Ed Jovanovski, Jovo Kopp will join us at 8. We'll continue the hockey conversation. After all, we're your home of Vancouver hockey. Right here, we're Sportsnet 650.
We talked about, you know, 15, 20 more percent in this game. And I think that up and down the lineup, everybody contributed today. Big Sutz, Motter, and Bo and Tanner and Louis, like they're on the ice the last 5-6 minutes of the game, you know, taking those gritty faceoffs, you know, taking slashes. And, you know, you can't say enough about, you know, the lineup top to bottom today.
Welcome to the starting lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
10 minutes to 8 o'clock. Ed Jovanovski will join the ski patrol, obviously, because he's got a ski in his name. Solkowski, Cebulski, Jovanovski. That's coming your way at the top of the clock. JT Miller with great comments there, I think, pointing to the fact that it was a total team effort and everybody raising their game after a lot of people were called out for not showing up after game one, Pair. This was a much different Vancouver Canucks performance last night.
Oh, boy, it'd be a much different city. Imagine if they would have lost last night and we'd be sitting there 0-2. Benning would be roasted. People would say, Jacob Markstrom, maybe you don't sign him. It's just amazing how everything flips. But I think there was a confidence in that hockey team. I think there was a confidence in the fan base going, okay, well, what we've watched with this young hockey team over the year has been their ability to bounce back. They're better than they showed in game one, whether it was nerves, whatever the situation. As they said, we'll be better. Travis Green said, we'll be better. And they were. I mean, I was pretty confident. I didn't think they were going to score first shift. And then I actually thought, okay, now they got some penalty opportunities. They're going to, power play is going to score, and they're going to push Minnesota away. That's disrespectful for the Wild, who will scratch and claw. But I think Vancouver is the better team. Most expect them to win this series. All they've done is even it up. But so much confidence, James, from what they put forth yesterday in a series that they've been really good 5-on-5. Special teams, not so much, but they've evened it all up.
They certainly have. And you know, from a special team standpoint, there's Louis Erickson, almost 4.5 minutes on the penalty kill, stepping up after being a healthy scratch. Tyler Mott was brilliant last night. And for all the conversation, the suggestion with some of the names going, okay, who would you take out of the lineup? That was one that I never thought was a consideration. The times that Travis Green has talked about when Tyler Mott's been hurt, to say, look, when he's healthy, he just gives us a different look on that line. And there's, you know, Tyler Mott last night, 3 hits, a block shot, 13.5 minutes of ice time last night. You know, for the outrage that there was 2.5 years ago, Perry, when Thomas Vanek was dealt and you couldn't get a draft pick because what was wrong with Jim Benning that you couldn't even get a draft pick? Who was Tyler freaking Mott? Look at that conversation. And there's a lot of people listening right now that were part of that conversation going, who in the blue hell is Tyler Mott? And look at Tyler Mott now. He has served to be a solid role player here for this team the last couple of seasons. When he's healthy, he gives that burst of speed. He is tenacious on the puck when he plays. He helps on the penalty kill. I've liked him, and I thought he was a difference maker again last night too.
He was, and you know, our poll question says, what surprised you? And we should give credit where credit's due, and we have to the top six, and we've said JT Miller's been good, Tanner Pearson scores, PD competes, Besser gets his goal. Well, hey, you know, the captain was the captain, 71% faceoff percentage. He was great on the draw, played more than any other forward. Bo Horvat gets that goal, deflecting Quinn Hughes' shot, but Bo was just, he was rock solid. He was going to, you know, Bo Horvat's never going to be 4-point night for Bo Horvat. Bo Horvat's going to be, okay, you know what, put me out there as much as you want, coach. We're going to lock it down. JT Miller said as much. Louis Erickson can do the same thing, as did Pearson. So you got that complete game from your captain too, which sometimes is overlooked. And I've got to say it now, because I was going, where was the captain in game one? He needs to be more effective. He was. He was that big wall, that foundational wall that they needed in the faceoff circle in key situations. So, you know, there's not too many times you can win a playoff game and go, yeah, we had a lot of passengers tonight. There were none yesterday. Full credit for their victory.
7:54, Ed Jovanovski joins the conversation. We'll get Jovocop's thoughts on what he liked from Vancouver and much, much more. That's all still ahead right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
A cup of Joe and the Canuck commute.
Horvat in across the Minnesota line with a high wrist shot. Just sailed over the crossbar of Alex Stalock. Now it comes to Pearson. Right circle, he scores! Tanner Pearson in the opening minute, just 24 seconds in.
This is a tough series right now. It's hard, it's physical, and you know, we evened it up tonight. And it's getting funner as we go.
A five-star morning on the starting lineup.
There you go, and that's a five-star start. 24 seconds in, Tanner Pearson clearly on social media after game one. Clearly seeing how much hate was thrown his way after a subpar game one. It steps up with a big goal in a big way. It sets the tone for the Canucks, and they even up the series. Cebulski, Sulkowski, this segment of Sportsnet 650 presented by Western Forest Products. Do you like the idea of living and working on Vancouver Island? Western Forest Products hiring various timber harvesting positions and certified tradesmen. Visit westernforest.com/careers. Pair, we've got the full-on ski patrol here ready to go this morning. Cebulski, Sulkowski, and you know who.
Well, the guy who told everybody, always take the team that loses the first game to bounce back and even up the series. Pretty much the case for everything. Joe Volkop with it this morning. And maybe Eddie should be dressing for the Panthers because they might be done. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Everything good? Everyone's excited. Yeah. Big win.
Yeah, did it surprise you, Eddie, you know, since we've last talked that maybe they were a little flat, or is it the fact that offensive talent maybe takes a little while longer to supersede the smart defensive positioning? Because it seems like, you know, game two, you know, Nashville, the Leafs, you know, the Oilers, the Canucks, offense simply better than defense.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to score goals. And you got to play well defensively, and usually that leads to good offense. And you look at some of the teams that lost the game one, you knew they were going to be better. Even in our case here in with Vancouver, you know, everyone said the right things. It was a bounce back game. The coach said they'll be better. It's really the bottom were really good too. Defense played solid. And, you know, I thought it was a good game to get back into this series because, boy, you know, you get down 2-0, man. It's an uphill battle, especially, you know, best of five.
What'd you think of the idea? Obviously, there was so much going into this one with the roster changes. Vertanen draws in. Louis Erickson draws in as well. Both Gaudette and Toffoli were deemed unfit to play. I think Toffoli could be a real big loss for the Canucks, depending on the severity of his injury, if he's out long-term. But give me a sense of what you thought from the two guys who jumped in cold, I guess, in their first games of this year's playoffs.
Well, start with Vertanen. I thought he was good. You know, he skated well. He's a big body, so I think he's a tough guy to, you know, when moving his feet, he's a very tough guy to defend. I like his compete level. I like the way he, especially on that one play where he backchecked, you know, to all the way from the offensive zone down into the defensive zone. Louis, you know, he's a guy that played, I believe, 12 years in the league. He's a veteran guy that you could slide up and down the lineup, even if he'd been out and cold. You know, inserting him back in the lineup, probably giving, you know, those guys a little bit of calmness. You know, he's a guy that, you know, you can slide into that lineup and not skip a beat. I mean, I think he was good. I think there's, you know, he want to be better, but I think in the whole situation of sliding into the lineup, I thought these guys did a really good job.
Ed Jovanovski joining us as he always does. Eddie, play this role for me. You're a Minnesota Wild defenseman last night. What did you see differently than you did in game one?
Sorry, Perry, you repeat that?
Pretend you're a Minnesota Wild defenseman. What did you see differently yesterday from your opposition than you did in game one?
Well, just the drive. I mean, putting the pucks in areas where you have the ability to get that puck back. I think the speed in the neutral zone, it's so hard as a defenseman to defend when you have that neutral zone speed and you really get backed up as a defenseman. So I thought the Vancouver Canucks did a great job on neutral zone pace, not forcing things through the middle, driving the net, getting to those gritty areas where it makes it a tough night on, you know, on these defensemen. And you looked at times, they looked pretty ordinary out there with, you know, with Vancouver, the way that they possessed their speed and their grit and their will to get to the front of the net.
You know, you look at how this team seems to respond out there. The guys like Tyler Mott, you know, JT Miller described it as saying, like, everybody gave 15 to 20% more, but, you know, oftentimes we overlook the bottom six contributions from kind of those role players and grinders. Mott, Beagle, like, there's something to be said about having veteran guys out there, isn't it, Eddie? I mean, just that sort of trust. I mean, guys like Beagle, guys like Sutter out there. I mean, there's a little bit of that devil you know mentality, I think, from a coaching staff that gives them a little bit of peace of mind, isn't it?
for sure. You know, and Beagle's won a Stanley Cup. He knows what it takes, or how, you know, to play in the playoffs. You look at Mott's effort on the penalty kill. You need these grinding guys. And trust me, if you're going to have an extended, you know, playoff run, you need your bottom six guys to be contributors. There's always that one line, you know, in the bottom six that you can look at a Stanley Cup team and say, listen, these were the difference.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the Niedermeyer, Moen,
in 07, you're right.
In it. Right. Yeah. You know, and you can probably go through, you know, a lot of the years and look at these bottom six guys that are a huge part. And yesterday was an example of that. I mean, Mott, I really liked his game. Beagle, I liked his game. I like his feistiness. You know, you throw, you know, obviously Vertanen, you got Sutter, you got Frillin. I mean, you got these guys that can really be difference makers.
Is it difficult, or how different is it to play a game like yesterday with all the power play opportunities and all the penalty kill situations?
Well, it definitely disrupts the flow. Hopefully the power play edge, you know, is in your favor, where you get your top guys that are playing. And I know when you kill penalties, sometimes guys are not in that role, and it disrupts flow of, you know, ice time and kind of a lot of things. But I think, you know, yeah, I mean, it just kind of stops the flow of a game when you got good pace, good tempo. You know, you got to get into that, you know, special teams mode. But it's something that just comes with the game that you got to kind of adjust to.
You know, you look at from the flip side, Kevin Fiala, you know, two goals late in that one, probably not the prettiest finish from Vancouver, but they still get the win. In my mind, Kevin Fiala has been the best player in this series. And that takes nothing away from the way Pettersson played last night, and he fought through it all in game one. But how would you view it? I mean, Kevin Fiala has taken his game, you know, in 2020 to a next level. And he did that right before kind of the pandemic stopped everything. But this guy is just a different hockey player now.
I know. What happened to this guy?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I mean, 14, I think it was 14 goals in the last 18 games.
Yeah.
You know, heading into the playoffs. Yeah, he's been awesome. He's been awesome for them. I think the last two goals there were, okay, there were goals that kind of got him back into it. I thought Vancouver did a, you know, pretty good job on him. You know, I think, you know, players like that are riding high, you got to just do your best to finish this guy and take his ice away. Always said top players find ways, you know, to get their opportunities. You know, you just got to limit those grade A ones for them, and I think they'll be fine. But yeah, certainly he's definitely a guy with playing with lots of confidence right now, and Vancouver's definitely got to make sure that he's not the difference moving here forward in the next few games.
Have you been surprised by Pettersson? In the sense that, okay, now it's for real, kid. It's going to get really ugly. You're going to have to get to the dirty areas. And all this kid does is go, okay, then I'll show you how I can play that game. There he is in front of the net, going hard to the goal for Miller's goal. There he is in front of the net, gets a piece of it to Brock Besser. There he is giving some stick back to people. It's like he's gone away to Sweden and all was training with Vikings and come back and go, oh, Mr. North America hockey player, you think I can't play this game? Man, Eddie, he has embraced it full in 120 minutes.
Right, he has. And, you know, he likes it. He likes it. He's a competitive guy. And you look at where he is on the ice. I mean, he's into those really high traffic, gritty areas where he's not afraid to get to. Makes a nifty play back to the point, kind of coming across his body on his forehand, having the, you know, the awareness to know that his point's open. And then what does he do? Boom, right back to the net, kind of gets a stick on it, and it ends up in the net. So, yeah, he's tenacious. He's a guy that's just not going to be denied. And I tell you what, when you see your top-end talent working how hard he's working, I mean, it rips up and down your lineup through the locker room, through everybody. and it's a good thing to see.
Looking around the rest of the National Hockey League, in about 45 minutes from now, game number 3 gets underway between the Islanders and the Panthers. You were part of the broadcast crew for the Panthers all season long. What's happened to the Cats?
Well, their game 2 was the game to win. You know, obviously it's, you know, having the 1-0 lead and then the 2-1 lead, and then this simply melting. The D-zone coverage, you have fourth-line guys that are going between their legs to guys wide open in the blue paint. I mean, what do you expect Bob to do? So there's been, you know, you look at the start of their game, you're like, okay, they look like they're on their game. And then I don't know if it's just getting complacent. I don't think the playoffs or the playing round are time to get complacent. You definitely got to step on teams' throats. Islanders play a patient game. They wait for you to make mistakes. And unfortunately, those mistakes have ended up in the back of the Panthers' net. And we'll see today. You know, it's going to be an uphill battle, but I think you just got to worry about winning one game.
The Carolina Hurricane have to worry about resting for about a week. I told Seaball, I'm all in on this group, man. I like how they play hockey. I love Rod Brind'Amour as a coach. That surprise you, or are they, I'm going to say, not taken with enough respect, but how good is that Carolina team to be done in 3 straight?
Well, Perry, you know, I remember them coming in, you know, into Florida this year, and I'm like, I like the Cats here tonight. And it was like 4-0 after 1. I never seen a team. I never seen a team with so much team speed. Like, they literally fly up and down the ice. And when you get that whole concept of getting it, you know, that Rod Brind'Amour, you know, style game where you're really kind of grinding the corners and letting their skill players do their work. I mean, it's impressive. I mean, their back end is moves the puck well. They're forwards. They got a great mix, you know, veterans and young players. And yeah, at 1-1, I didn't know which way, honestly, watching this game yesterday, which way it was going to go. And that bang, bang, it's like game over, you know? So they're for real. They're for real.
They were a Final Four team last year. There's a lot of people that seem to overlook that.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they, you know, with their skill and their work ethic and how their lineup is constructed, I think it's a real good mix, and they play a solid team game, and it's evident watching them. I mean, there's nothing special that's going on, other than guys just flying up and down the ice and speed kills. And that's what I thought in the Vancouver game. I think when you start making these defensemen start turning and chasing the puck and really kind of making it tough for them, it makes for a long night. And that's what Carolina did to the Rangers. I mean, literally had no answer.
Well, and Eddie, we can draw that parallel, can't we, to what happened in Toronto with the Leafs? Their talent up front's never been questioned. The compete rate of it has. And I know Torts yesterday just said we sucked and they were good. You know, if they play with that kind of level of intensity, compete, as much as many people thought Torts' team would be good enough, do you see the Leafs maybe having turned a corner yesterday?
I think so. And when you have high-end talent and you're not competing in the playoffs, the hard work's always going to win. Now, you combine that hard work, you know, with, you know, Matthews and Marner and Tavares and these guys that are grinding, you're going to get opportunities. And I think you saw that with the Leafs, and it's kind of been the question about the Leafs for a long time. You know, they have the talent. You know, sometimes you're just getting outworked and you get frustrated with the younger guys not being able to produce offensively. It looks like they definitely turned the corner last game. It's just, I know Torts, the way he coaches, they're going to have an answer to. It's going to be a pushback. It'll be an interesting rest of the series.
Like
Columbus is one team that scares me, you know.
Yep. Yeah, I think they terrify the entire Leafs nation right now.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I mean, Korpisalo, at least he showed he was human, but you know, not a great effort in the eyes of John Tortorella from their team last night. I want to change gears here for 1 second, and I want to get your perspective on something from your time here in Vancouver. Gino Ogic was on a podcast yesterday, a Cam and Strick show, and he had this to say. I want to play this for you because he basically called Mark Messier's time in Vancouver a disaster. Take a listen to this clip because I want to get your perspective because you were in Vancouver with number 11 as well. Have a listen to this here.
You know, he was a good player when he was in New York and when he was Edmonton, but he couldn't play the way, like what happened is the coach would call a line out and he would just get up and jump on the ice without his number being called. And he wanted to be on the ice all the time. But at that time he was at the end of his career and he couldn't compete against the young centerman anymore, but he didn't want to accept that. He still wanted to play the number one line and play 25 minutes a night. And you know, it was a disaster for us when he came to Vancouver. But, you know, I respect him as a player when he was in New York and Edmonton during his years where he was a prime. But when he came to Vancouver, he wasn't the same guy anymore.
I always get a sense that the veterans didn't, you know, the guys who were here didn't love the fact that when Messier came, it really kind of changed the team. But, you know, as a young guy, how was your experience with Mess? Does it jive with what Gino was saying, or do you look at it differently?
Yeah, I don't know. He was good to me, Seaball. You know, I went to Mess's place after morning skate and had Maria cook pregame for me all the time there in Vancouver. So, I mean, on the, I didn't see it. I mean, being younger, I think you're, you know, you come into a situation and, you know, for me, you know, being a teammate of his, you know, I looked up to him. I watched how he handled himself. The only thing I saw, you know, with Mess is, you know, his tinkering with equipment. You know, I never seen anybody like it with skates and sticks and so on and so forth. But as far as the teammate situation, yeah, I mean, you know, Gino, he was great in Edmonton and in New York. Yeah, it's the latter part of his career. He came, probably wasn't the same player, but as far as, you know, being a teammate or jumping on the ice, you know, when the coach is not calling him, I didn't see it. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention, but.
Thank you for this. I know you've been paying attention. Great to hear you on our shows, the pre and post game show as you get things done. You know, thanks for letting everybody, if they're going to bet a unit or two, to always make sure you take the team that loses game one to even it up. It worked for me. So
hey, you would have killed it. That's right.
I listen to what you say, my friend. You can help people out. Thanks, buddy. We'll catch up again. We'll listen for you tomorrow as the Canucks get set to go early in the morning.
All right, guys, my pleasure.
Hey, much more civilized time for you tomorrow. 11:30 puck drop here on the West.
I know these late nights. Oof, man.
Just can't
now
golf
I got
to
take my kids to go get their school physicals.
Oh, really?
They got to get physicals for school.
Yeah, every year. You know, the blue and yellow forms.
Man, when do they start school there?
They're going the 24th.
And our masks, are they wearing masks? I've seen some pictures of some
masks,
tough cases.
They've got outfitted the schools with, you know, pretty much plexiglass between the kids. So I think, every precaution is being taken.
Why don't you just give them your old helmets with your visors there, Eddie? I mean, that's probably like a PPE mask, right?
I could just see. It'd be great if your son went crazy on the plexiglass, banging it like when Cookie scored a goal. I got that question right. Damn you. I saw my dad do this.
Yeah. Anyway.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys. Enjoy the day.
Some rest. Thanks, buddy.
See you, man.
Jovanovski. Jovalkop weighing in with his thoughts around the National Hockey League and the Canucks. A much better performance by the Canucks last night, and Jovalkop certainly echoing that sentiment as well, Pierre.
Let's give the people a little bit of now you know what else is going on in the world of sports right now, Seaball.
We're dropping knowledge this early in the morning.
I am smart. S-M-R-T.
This is Now You Know on the Starting Lineup. Here's James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
Love when we fire up the horns. Let's tell you, people like watching hockey in August. It's taken a while, but on the weekend, almost 11 million people tuned in to watch hockey games. Just under a million for the Canucks for the whole game. 3.1 for total watch of game number one as far as the Canucks were concerned. It's been strange, James. I've talked about it. You were saying you could take a dip in the ocean yesterday. Then you're getting ready for it. There's meaningful games from 9 o'clock until midnight. But people care about their hockey. Those numbers are impressive, as are the numbers of a head coach who's going to go to work at 9 this morning, Barry Trotz. His team ready to see if they can eliminate Florida. His winning percentages in the last couple teams in the playoffs, .576. He had a bad spell with Nashville, then got him on a run. Successful with Washington, and he's been able to turn the trick with the New York Islanders. Barry Trotz loves talking hockey, loves coaching. The numbers are big for coaches and for people who are watching the game right now, James.
Lowest
now
rated,
you know.
Lowest rated Canadian playoff matchup was the Canucks and the Wild. I think that's probably partly because of the time for the rest of the country.
Guaranteed.
When you look in the East Coast, game starting at 10:30 on the West Coast there for game one. But nice to see. Now you know. Well, in his first game back, in his first at-bat back after leaving the Los Angeles Angels to be there for the birth of his first child, Mike Trout stepped to the plate and did Mike Trout things.
Nola setting up outside. It's a breaking ball hammered out toward left center field. Hit well. Kyle Lewis back. That's gone. Big fly for Mike Trout. Welcome back.
How about that? Home run in his first at-bat back after becoming a dad. He's got dad power now, Pear.
Yeah, that he's just he's the unwanted superstar who's starting to talk more. Man, there's a couple guys that are worth the price of admission, but Trout. Timing is everything, and his always seems to be good as you can find in Major League Baseball. Now you know that. Yesterday, the Detroit Lions removed Matthew Stafford from the reserve COVID-19 list. It was a false positive. His wife went to Instagram, Kelly, and goes, you know how embarrassing this has been? Our kids have been told they weren't allowed to go to school. I've had to have grocery stores say, you can't come in. You're endangering everybody else. They wouldn't want me to go in to pick up the food. We have been ostracized by this. The NFL, we got it wrong. Our family's been tested. It was a false positive. You know what? I can sympathize a bit, but deal with it. That's why there's such a problem in America. If it's possible that your husband tested positive, and it was, people around you don't want to see it. James, if you tested positive, I don't want you coming over for dinner. Stay away until it's okay. That's the problem. I'm sorry, Kelly Stafford. That's the world you live in. It's not about your kids. It's not about you. It's about everyone else. And if you have been told you're positive, then you're going to have to back off for a bit and not worry about, oh, my kids feel bad. I got to go get my own groceries. It's happening. They don't understand it. The Lions said, hey, yeah, it was a false positive. For the 48 hours of inconvenience, deal with it.
But why? It's common sense, right? If your significant other tests positive, are you going on the day-to-day? And if you know, honestly, I'd be pissed off, too. If I knew somebody, like a neighbor, had tested positive and their significant other is still out and about on the day-to-day, it's like, no, man, like, you got to make sure you're tested and at least to cover yourself. Like, it's the impact, right? It's common sense. Be better. Come on, Kelly. Come on.
Now you know.
Oh, you didn't know?
By the way, groupings have been announced, just real quick here, Pear, groupings have been announced for the PGA Championship, and how about this one for tomorrow morning, 8:30, so basically in about 24 hours from now, Justin Thomas, Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy teeing off.
We always said August is going to be great, hockey, basketball, golf, it's all happening in August, when everyone normally goes, yeah, let's just go camping.
You watch that for the first 3 hours before you finally got the puck drop with the Canucks and the Wild
yeah,
for Game 3
good.
Tomorrow. 27 minutes after 8 o'clock, we'll hear from JT Miller. We'll hear from Jacob Markstrom. We'll hear from Travis Green. We'll also hear from some of the Minnesota Wild as well as the Canucks get back into this series. All tied up at 1. It's a best of 3 now. 2 out of 3 falls right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome to The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Shaping up to be a nice one. Sunny skies, a high of 25. With the humidex, it'll feel like 29. This segment of Sportsnet 650 presented by Western Forest Products. Do you like the idea of living and working on Vancouver Island? Western Forest Products is hiring various timber harvesting positions and certified tradesmen. All you got to do is visit westernforest.com/careers. James Perry with you, and a much different sort of tone to the post-game show last night and even on our text line this morning at 6:50 this morning, Perry.
Yeah, it is, and not surprisingly, I think there was confidence in the fan base, confidence in the locker room that the Canucks would jump back. Perfect start to the game to score that quick. I think the last 7 minutes, you're going to hang on here, like, let's put this to bed, but most people feel, and we're not biased in this city, hockey experts around North America, that if the Canucks play well, they're the better hockey team. And James, I don't want to, it's done, but you have to think, boy, if you don't have Tyler Toffoli, if you don't have Michael Ferland now, that's a hit. But the great part is, thanks, Jake Virtanen, showed in your 8 minutes, there's a spark there. You know, thanks, Louis Erickson, right onto that number one line, very responsible with all the penalty kills, too. There's a lot to be positive about getting set for what will be a strange time, if you're not aware, 11:30 tomorrow morning, game number 3. And they finally have to go back-to-back because they'll play game 4 on Friday.
What I do wonder is it going to be sustainable? Like, is it going to be sustainable for the Canucks to continue to win going forward, if Toffoli's out long term, if Ferland's out long term, now the Canucks were able to, you know, to push on through without Ferland, who was really a non-factor for the team during the regular season. But you'd love to see that physical element and, you know, a healthy Michael Ferland and how he can impact this team. When you look at what he has done and pretty much averaged just, you know, close to 20 goals a season for the better part of the last 3 years before coming to Vancouver. But is it sustainable long-term for the Canucks when you lose a guy like Toffoli? And if Toffoli's hurt, here's the other thought. If Toffoli's hurt and this team does have some success and goes deep where Toffoli is out long-term, you know, does that change the off-season game plan? You know, are they as inclined to want to sign Tyler Toffoli? Obviously, with the limited financial restrictions now, you got to keep Jacob Markstrom. Does that change some of the thinking as well? Just a couple of thoughts, food for thought here going forward. We obviously don't know the severity of the injury, but
I would say this. It hurts them, but I was of the mindset going into this. I didn't think this tournament was going to be as tough as it has been. Like that here we are, you're talking about guys injured, you've played 2 hockey games. So with that being said, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, people can text in, I think if the Canucks beat the Minnesota Wild by Sunday, or maybe they've got rid of them by Friday, it's now house money. Because I was of the mindset before this started, you know what, if they get knocked out, or it really won't be like they've had playoff experience. They could lose the next 2 games, and I would say, no, they have playoff experience now. Next April or whenever they play in the playoffs next year, they will be battle-tested. They will understand what the playoffs are. This play-in round is certainly playoff hockey. So I think if they get by the Wild, their depth is going to be tested. And, you know, it's house money, though. They've made it through 1. They're going to get 2 series under their belt. So I will look at it as, I don't know if they can last long-term with this. But I think they're deep enough that they could win this play-in series. And the play-in really is postseason hockey, as we see the intensity that we've watched over the last 4 days.
We'll hear from some of the key ingredients from last night's game momentarily. Should share this news. The Leafs announcing this morning that Jake Muzzin is back at the team's hotel. He was discharged overnight from the hospital. But he is out for the remainder of the series against Columbus because of this injury. So He will stay in quarantine within the hotel and then will hopefully join his teammates once he's recovered. But Jake Muzzin gone for the rest of the series. So that is a huge loss on the back end for the Toronto Maple Leafs heading into game number three against Columbus with that series tied at one.
Yeah, and that I'm just surprised there's been this much adversity. We saw so many injuries yesterday that this quick when you go, hey, the one thing is the players are all going to be healthy. Man, they play this game at such a high level.
The NBA right? There's been some key guys going down with some significant injuries over the last week as well. I mean, guys pushing it pretty quick after, you know, being idle for 4 months. It's a different world, and it's going to be a big adjustment for a lot of teams. Travis Green, after the game last night, was certainly encouraged by his team's bounce-back performance and certainly spoke glowingly of the win.
We talked to our group yesterday about a couple things that had to improve for us to win. And a big part of that was guys playing better. And I thought everyone raised their game tonight. Eddie was a horse. Like you said, all the veteran guys, I thought, you know, we're down to 10 forwards in the third, 11 for the whole game. Louis Erickson hasn't played in a while. And comes in and plays 20 minutes with the kill and matchup role with Bo. You can go right through. I thought Myers has been outstanding as well, playing physical. All our D, I'm happy with them, and I thought our forwards really responded tonight. This is a tough series right now. It's hard. It's physical, and we evened it up tonight, and it's getting funner as we go. Funner is probably not the right word, but I'll use it. More fun. How's that?
Yeah, 11 o'clock at night, it's funner. You know, midnight for them in Edmonton. It was funner. Travis Green's not, one to throw a whole lot of praise at individuals, but he made sense, and the top six stepped up. Louis Erickson was great to come off of the stands and do that. Also, Brock Besser. Right place, James, right time. And Besser talked about his performance and what it meant, and being a little more comfortable in game two.
Well, it's exciting to score your first playoff goal, and I think it's a big goal for our team. I thought our team played a pretty strong game tonight, and obviously it was nice to play with Petey and Millsy. Obviously, we have some chemistry from the past, so I feel that we picked up where we left off, and as top six forwards, and we needed to contribute tonight, and I thought we did that.
I just can't help but go back to thinking, Pear, that I just want to get a T-shirt made, funner guy.
Yeah, it could be funner guy. Sure, it's funner. It's funner. Whatever it takes.
If Kawhi's fun guy, I mean, Travis Green's got to be funner guy.
Yeah, team like that. Remember that T-shirt a long time ago? Team like that.
Team like that.
It seems so long ago. But Brock was good. And just the sense of relief of working hard and finally right place, right time. And give Besser and Pettersson the credit. Going, you know what, if you want to take your game to the next level at this time of year, can't be shooting from the outside all the time. And both those guys just said, okay, I'm going to get hacked, I'm going to get whacked, but I'm getting in front of the goalie, and they did, and that's where they found success.
Well, and JT Miller was touching on that last night, and just what did you need to see from this team, in terms of responding, getting to the net? Todd Bertuzzi spoke at length about it yesterday, saying it's moving your feet more, and here's what JT Miller had to say in terms of, digging down deep and pulling off a total team effort to get the win.
We talked about, 15, 20 more percent in this game, and I think that up and down the lineup, everybody contributed today. We needed, Big, Sutz, Motter, and Bo, and Tanner, and Louis, they're on the ice the last 5-6 minutes of the game, taking those gritty face-offs, taking slashes, and, you can't say enough about, the lineup top to bottom today.
No passengers, right? And that's
as
simple as it is. Every team that won yesterday, Calgary, Toronto, you look up and down, James, and everybody pulling the rope. And unless you are so good that you've got some superstars that can get it done, and there are some teams that have it, but McDavid was a show 48 hours ago, but you had support, and that's what the Canucks had yesterday.
They certainly did, and to see efforts, again, it goes back to Louis Erickson and, you know, Louis playing 20 minutes last night. And I know a lot of people were cringing going, you got to give me a break. Louis Erickson is going to play and he's going to play 20 minutes. For that to happen, unbelievable. No, David North Burnaby saying, Louis played a pretty good game last night, but his stick just couldn't handle the pressure in the spotlight, right? Of course, you know, the stick collapsing is just like, yeah, okay, you know, Louis's having a great game. What can he do to just, there you go. There's the Louis Erickson moment. But
well, hey, yeah, and you could smile because of the score at that point.
Yes.
Oh, man, of course
yeah,
it's going to
happen. If that's the
to
game,
him.
It's a different story, right?
You know, another thing, and Kelly Rudy made a great point after 20 minutes on the intermission saying, man, I love Jacob Markstrom, but he's fighting it tonight. He's fighting it. Jacob Markstrom probably doesn't look at these last two games and go, man, I am in a groove, but he is good enough, is sound enough technically that he's been able to be there and make the saves. He spoke post-game, you know, 5-on-5, I'm seeing the puck, I'm feeling good about myself. He's another guy who will come with more confidence tomorrow.
I mean, 5-on-5. You know, I'm seeing the puck. That's what I'm doing. And you know, the guys are doing a great job. They're battling in front of me, and you know, they have a lot of big tough players that you know goes to the net really hard. And you know, our D and centers and forward doing a great job of boxing out and blocking shots and clearing rebounds. So I think that's the main reason for the 5-on-5 success. And I mean, last shot too. It wasn't much left on the clock, and it can't really, you know, it's tough when you get a lot of time to think what you want to do. And I just, you know, let it hit me in the head.
That was just the strangest 5 seconds left. And it was like, really? How are you playing that one?
All I can think of is that Denzel Washington gif there where he's like, just that sigh of relief for a lot of Canucks fans watching that play out last night. just at the end. I mean, yeah, you could have used Mariano Rivera for the final 3 minutes of that game last night, the way things played out at the end for the Canucks. But hey, a win's a win. Series all tied up at one. And there you go. Game three in 26 hours or so from now, tomorrow. We got you covered here on Sportsnet 650. Final thoughts before we turn things over to the Scott Rintoul Show, including our poll results. What was most surprising from you last night? We'll get to that next right here on Sportsnet 650.
Now more of the starting lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
All right, 11 minutes to 9 o'clock. The Scott Rintoul Show taking on over at the top of the hour, and we'll be back at it tomorrow. Brian Burke drops by the show. Ian McIntyre is in Edmonton. He'll also drop by as it's an early start for everyone. I'd be curious to see what the approach is for game day tomorrow, 11:30. Like, obviously we're still in the middle of a pandemic, so like, what's your bubble look like? Do you get together with buddies to watch the game? Like, I had a friend of mine who was telling me the other day, Pear, that he was invited to go watch game one at a friend's place, and then he was like, yeah, that sounds great. And then his buddy quickly tells him, he's like, yeah, there'll be about 10 of us. And he was like, yeah, okay, you know what, that's great for you, but count me out. Like, I'm not doing that. But like, what's the approach?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'd heard that we'll see that there had been some talk that by round three, we may see some family and friends allowed into the actual building to watch conference finals and then a Stanley Cup final. So I am not completely convinced that we will see a Stanley Cup given without some family and friends in the actual buildings to watch play. But yeah, I don't know if, I wasn't out with late night for us. You were watching the game at home. I don't know if there were bars that had, you know, whatever their capacity was allowed, if they were going crazy. I did see some car flags, but tomorrow morning is interesting, man. 11:30 start. I'm sure the guys will have slept in, stay away from the ice today, go over, I would imagine, their power play, what they can do better against the pressure from Minnesota. And then it's up early. And it's funny, the Canucks and the Wild have kind of watched everybody play all these condensed games. I mean, the Rangers were done before they had finished game two. So we'll see what happens. It's a massive 24-hour period tomorrow, and then play again on Friday to see who can close this thing up.
We could see a second team eliminated later this morning, as well as the Islanders look to sweep the Florida Panthers. That's a puck drop coming up in about 8 minutes from now, and to see if the Panthers could be quickly eliminated there. And then later on tonight, obviously, two more Canadian teams in action. You got the Habs, you know, against the Penguins. That's a 5 o'clock start, and then 7:30 tonight, you've got the Oilers trying to take the lead against the Hawks. That series also tied up at one game apiece there. So, yeah, no shortage of puck coming your way fast and furiously here. And we got you covered here on Sportsnet 650.
Our poll question as we wrap things up: what was the most surprising takeaway last night for you? EP40's physical play, Jake on the back check doing his job, Erickson logs you 20 minutes of ice from the press box, and Besser's play. 43% have just been surprised and pleasantly, because that was the last thing missing in his game, is how Pettersson is going, you know what, I'm a star player, I'm going to get rattled. They're trying to rattle him, but he has been right there with him in all the physical play. 35% of you impressed with Louis Erickson. Yes, forget the $6 million. That's the first time in 3 hours we've mentioned the contract. He was very effective in coming in a tough situation, and will have to be, I would imagine, although we don't know the injury situations, for the rest of this series too, likely on that top role.
I thought people should have shotgunned a beer for Jake Virtanen's back check. You know, I mean, could have still celebrated shotgun Jake for that back check. How many times have you seen that? I mean, Louis' 20 minutes was the most surprising for me. And saying that, man, like, to see the Brock Besser of 2 years ago show up last night, to see the physical side of Elias Pettersson, so many different surprises. One last note before we get out of here. Joel Quenneville has scratched Mike Matheson, it looks like, for the Panthers. And, man, he got fined earlier in the playoffs. And, you know, the guy who once took out Elias Pettersson pair in the doghouse for Joel Quenneville as they face elimination there in Florida.
Yeah, there you go. EP is laughing today going, I'm the physical player and you're just watching.
The Scott Rintoul Show is next. For Perry, I'm James. Talk to you Thursday right here on Sportsnet 650.